Blog Talk Radio.
Because here we go with the main event of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen in attendance, Bucks and fans joining us around the world. It's time for the bout you've all been waiting for. Finally, it's been showtime.
Here, man, we dedicate our life to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we want that fight to land on the line.
Hey, what up, boxing fans? This is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday afternoon, late afternoon, okay? It's 5 o'clock, so it's late afternoon. Anyway, you know, boxing has been a little down and out. When I say a little, I mean a lot. It's been rough. Obviously, even this coming weekend, we were supposed to have Figueroa in Fulton, which is a big fight next week, and we got a big fight with Joshua Usyk. But between COVID, fights getting delayed, negotiations failing, postponements, the whole nine, you know what I mean? It's been rough. It has been rough. But we have some good news today. Terrence Crawford and Sean Porter, a lot of people wanted to be on that live stream to watch the purse bid go down. That's not going to be the case. It is a done deal. From the sounds of it, the PBC and Fox did not want to do a co-promotion on this one, and it's going to be on ESPN pay-per-view. I think they call it ESPN Plus pay-per-view, technically. So, you know, it's a great fight. It's a great fight. And you know, being that Fox, what is it, November 6th, they probably didn't want to do another pay-per-view a couple weeks. That's only 2 weeks later, so I get it. I don't really care who's doing the damn thing. I'm just glad that this fight that's been discussed for a while, it finally started the negotiation process. The WBO, you know, called for it. They got an extension, and here we are, a done deal in Las Vegas, like I said, June 20th, and I'm happy. I'm really, really happy. So, like I said, we did get a fight taken away from us. Hopefully that gets rescheduled, you know, later this year. Sounds like it will. Brandon Figueroa's sister, who's his strength and conditioning coach, I think she's a fighter too, I think she's a boxer. She had a video out. I'm not talking about like that kind of video, guys, okay? No, she was discussing it, you know, and there it sounds like they're going to reschedule this fight before years. And of course, you don't want to rush back from COVID for Figueroa. Same with Chocolatito, Roman Gonzalez, right? He got COVID. He had to drop out. Some people are saying, all right, let's get it in November. Well, maybe it'll be December. Give, you know, Gonzalez a little bit more time to face Estrada. But either way, those are two big fights. We already have the trilogy, Fury and Wilder. We have Undisputed at 168. A month later with Canelo and Plant, we have Crawford and Porter. Now we need everyone else to fill in. And maybe, just maybe, we can duplicate some of the stuff we were able to do last fall when that boxing had a very, very strong close. So I'm excited. You know, like I said, it's been a rough couple of, six, 8 weeks as a boxing fan. But all is well. You know, we're going to preview that a little bit today. By the way, Jake Donovan, senior writer of BoxingScene.com, will be stopping in just a couple of minutes. We're going to talk about the Crawford Porter. We're going to talk about the last weekend's debacle. You know, we knew going in Holyfield had really no business being in the ring. it's funny because it's really not funny. That's a poor choice of words. But, you know, the way it was said to the public that it is a real fight, and Triller's talking about it's the fight of the decade, and then all of a sudden we find out they actually weren't real fights, you know? You got people betting on this. The first glancing shot that Belfort landed, Holyfield was already shook up. I mean, we already knew he had no business being in the ring. What was it? Did I read that 2002 or 2003 he was banned by the New York Athletic Commission? You know, he's been fighting in other countries before that, but it had been 10 years since he fought. So just thank goodness he wasn't in there with a professional fighter, boxer, I should say. Because that could have went real, real ugly. I mean, there was people, and this is just, you know, out of hate, probably, for Wilder. But, you know, there was people that saying the Holyfield will probably beat Wilder. Tyson will probably beat Wilder, you know. It was bad. I saw the clip. I did not pay for the pay-per-view. There was only one fight on there. We'll talk a little bit about that. Andy Venez and Carroll, Jonah Carroll. So, which was a competitive fight. It wasn't really that action-packed, but it was competitive in the ring, that's for sure. We will talk a little bit about that fight. We'll talk about Oscar Valdez, who just, you know, barely snuck by his opponent. Shouldn't have been in the ring anyway, as we know. It should have been a postponed fight. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, with Jake, we'll talk about, like I said, you know, the debacles that happened last week. And we'll talk about this Crawford-Porter. And then see what, you know, if he can give us any information or any good news about some fights coming up on the schedule as well. And maybe some other, you know, news items that he has. But before we get into this, if this is your first time listening to the Ropadope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Ropadope Radio. However, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and Ropadope and download the show directly there. If you don't want, you can listen to it in a variety of places. This platform is on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher. That's how that guy put that together, I guess. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you haven't, I got something for you. Or you haven't and, you know, you're not satisfied is what I meant to say. I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. The prices start as low as $69.99 a month. The best of live TV and on-demand. All your apps in one place with access to over 7,000 apps. Of course, no annual contract, no hidden fees. And if you upgrade to the Choice or Ultimate package, you get 3 months of HBO Max for free. You can also enjoy regional sports networks without additional fees. That's been a major thing. And boxing fans, just so you know, if you upgrade to the Premier package, that's HBO Max and Showtime. That's already included. That's DirecTV Stream. Okay. We're going to go ahead and bring in Jake Donovan, senior writer, solid, solid guy here from BoxingScene.com. We got to have the Jake segment once a month or so to talk about a variety of things. Let's go ahead and bring in Jake into the fold. What's going on, Jake? How you doing on this fine late afternoon, sir?
Hey, Chris. Yeah, man. I appreciate the show, and I appreciate always you having me on. That's been going well. Can't really wait to. For once, I can't wait to talk about boxing. It just seems like the boxing that we've had to talk about has not been a particularly favorable subject, but now we actually have some good news to discuss.
We sure do. We sure do. And I got to say, man, I've seen you everywhere. It's kind of nice. I listen to other shows, of course. All of a sudden, hey, there's Jake. Hey, there's Jake. This guy, in a good way, gets around. Okay, I'm not going to, you know, I don't mean to sound weird with that. But I do like that you give everybody an opportunity. You know, that's really cool, man. I think, and I appreciate it, especially on late notice, which sometimes it is with you. So we got some good news, like you said. We're going to start with that. We got to. Terrence Crawford, Sean Porter, take us through this down-to-the-wire stuff because, you know, all the the boxing purse bid heads were just, they had their stream going like they were trying to get tickets for Rage Against the Machine or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, man. It kind of threw off my morning and mid-afternoon. I kind of had my whole day, you know, scheduled around this. Well, for me, it would have been 11 o'clock first bid session. And, you know, I'm glad that both sides, you know, they were able to work it out, especially since it's two parties that, you know, they don't do a lot of fights together. And now, weirdly, they're doing two within the span of, like, 6 weeks now. So we got Top Rank and PBC working together for the third fight between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder, and now the welterweight fight between Terrence Crawford and Sean Porter. So, you know, credit to them for actually getting the deal done. There's been a lot of speculation that there was always going to be a deal in place. This fight never had a chance to go on a first bid, and I do want to clear that up. I mean, this fight, it was up until, I think when everybody woke up this morning, there still wasn't a deal in place. And then Top Rank and TGD, you know, they're finally able to piece together those, they're able to put together the final pieces in order to finalize this deal and avoid a first bid. I think the first bid got called off, I want to say like 3 hours before it was scheduled to begin. But I mean, Top Rank home already was in San Juan, Puerto Rico, you know, ready to attend TGD. I don't know if they had someone on the promotional staff or someone from their legal team that was there, but they were ready to bid. National Boxing sent someone there. They were ready to bid. So, you know, this there was going to be a legitimate bidding war for this fight. And, you know, both guys deserve it. It's, you know, we want to see the best fight the best. You know, maybe they're not the very best at welterweight. Daryl Terrence Crawford is certainly in the conversation. But Sean Porter is no worse than top five. I'd argue at least top four, maybe even top three. You know, it's a fight that we've wanted. You know, we've been skeptical, like, is it going to come together? Is, you know, Sean going to be steered in another direction? Is Terrence Crawford going to decide to take a different fight? And, you know, I don't know what he could have done if he opted to not fight Sean Porter. But I'm just glad that they were able to get this done, and we have to go through scrutiny of going through a purse bid, figuring out which promoter was going to get it, and then figuring out what platform it's on. Like, all those pieces we have in place today. So I'm really looking forward to November 20th.
Yeah, as am I. It'll be his best opponent, maybe Paul Stahl. Like Porter better than Paul Stahl. Not like him, but I think he's a better fighter. And then Gamboa, 35. You know, 26 and 30, Gamboa is a little different, not to take any credit away from both of them undefeated back then. But this is, especially at welterweight, the real deal. You know, he's never really fought too many rough and rugged dudes at the high level. So this is a great opportunity for both guys. And, you know, for Porter to be one of these guys that go over on the different network, that is really dope. I got to admit, Dick, I kind of thought we'd get this Keith Thurman-Sean Porter rematch out of nowhere. I really thought, like, okay, I see. This is the only fight that would maybe stop it, and that's what's going to happen. I really thought that might happen. But I am really happy that it's a done deal. Now, is there any other details? Is this just a one-off as far as Crawford? Like, you haven't heard anything about Terrence Crawford having to extend to make this fight or anything like that, right? Did ESPN just kind of say, hey, we got some money in the budget, we'll chip in? Or how did this thing all come together? Because Bob was fairly confident, and obviously he was right. I lost you, Jake. Uh-oh. Maybe it's on my side. I'm not sure. I just got... Oh, there we go. Uh-oh. Someone, you know, anyone that listened to Jake's last appearance, or I think it was two appearances ago, it didn't go great with the phone. So I'm sure he'll pop in here. Maybe not. Maybe. I don't know. But that was my one thing, like, you know, Baba always talking about, well, first of all, he said, I'll put out a million. That's all he's getting for Porter, you know, and that wouldn't make the fight go through. But I was assuming that Crawford was going to have his, you know, fight contract end and then see, you know, the options and whatnot. Okay, here, we're going to go ahead and bring in Jake back into it. All right, Deja Vu, it's you and me.
I know.
Here we go, Jake. Here we go.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know the weather's a little funky in my area, too. So I'm going to just try to sit still and not move anywhere around my house. So we were at how this fight came together. Yeah, with Top Rank. No, I give Bob credit. You know, he said that he had a date of November 20th in place for the Michelob Ultra Arena, you know, at Mandalay Bay. It was weird the way he phrased it, though. He said that, you know, Sean Porter was, you know, that they were confident Sean Porter was on board and that he had to get Terrence Crawford
right
on board. I'm like, well, why would you announce a fight when your own fighter isn't on board yet? That's what made me skeptical. And I'm like, well, you know, I heard that, as you know, this is just going to go straight to first bid. One thing I never doubted, though, was that, and honestly, when I worked with Sean Porter during the Olympics, I made a promise I wasn't going to discuss any, you know, anything about his career, because he works a lot of shows, and he says every time he's with a reporter, all they do is bug him with questions, and I didn't want to be that guy. But just, you know, casually talking to him, I always got the sense this was the fight he wanted. That I know somewhere out of the blue they mentioned that he could fight Keith Thurman, or they were going to throw another PBC welterweight in the mix. The only way that was going to really happen was, I think, if Errol Spence willingly gave up a title, which I never sensed was going to be the case, especially when Spence got injured. I can't see him, you know, just willingly, you know, walking away from the welterweight division and saying, screw it, I'm just going to start all over. I always sensed that he wanted to come back and at least defend the title one more time. So that wasn't going to be an option. The WBA, you know, they're not giving away any more titles. So I always got the sense that Sean Porter absolutely wanted this fight. And Crawford, you know, his team, you know, they wanted it from the beginning when the fight was very first offered. So it was just a matter of, you know, settling up with Top Rank. So as far as extending, my understanding is this is still his last fight with Top Rank. They owed him this fight regardless. So, you know, they had to, you know, do their due diligence to get it done. They have actually a very healthy schedule coming up. Once the third fight between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder happens, it's like the first of, like, I want to say almost, there's going to be like at least 10 out of 11 weeks where Top Rank is doing something, whether it's on ESPN or ESPN Plus or ESPN Plus pay-per-view. So this was very important for them to, you know, get to the finish line. And I do think that once September 2nd came around, you know, early talks, they seemed to fall flat. The big issue was that Fox Sports and ESPN, they were not interested in doing the same deal for this fight as they were for Fury and Wilder, simply put, because they're not going to make as much money, and it's not worth it, you know, invest that much, you know, resources into a fight that might top out at, I'm going to be generous and say, 250,000 pay-per-view bucks. It doesn't make sense for those two to come together. They come together for the big, big fights. So it was either going to be Fox Sports is going to have full control of it, or ESPN was going to have ESPN Plus is going to have full control of it. They couldn't get there at September 2nd. I think, you know, they sensed that, you know, the Zone and Matchroom Boxing, they were looking to bid on the fight. Then all of a sudden talks got extended by another 12 days. That's when they finally picked up, because the first time around, it just, like, they seemed to just come to a screeching halt. Then when they sensed, you know, the wolves are starting to circle the corral, that's when the two sides said, look, we got to get a deal done. We got to keep it either on, you know, PBC side or on Top Rank side and make sure nobody gets control of this fight. That finally happened this morning. So, you know, it was literally at the 11th hour. But, you know, I'm glad it got done. But, there's no extra you know, it's not like, you know, Terrence Crawford has to sign his life away to Top Rank in order for the fight to get done. Because, like I said, regardless whether or not, you know, whether or not they were able to reach a deal, Top Rank still owed him this fight regardless. So they were going to have to work with him for at least this one more fight. And the WBO had already ordered it, so it wasn't like he can go look for another option anyway.
Yeah, and I did like that helped negotiations, too, with the 60-40 when they called it. I really appreciated that. That did seem like it. Just get the extension. It felt like that makes a lot of sense now that you put it that way, that all of a sudden they're like, well, they were kind of creeping in, looking like they're going to buy, you know, try to buy the fight. Okay, now let's get serious and get this thing over the line. I'm just happy. Yeah. I'm happy for Porter because this guy's resume, win, lose, or draw, is just phenomenal. And then Crawford, you know, he has been stuck on that side of the street, whether we like it or not. And for him to get this, you know, the style does match up, I believe, with him. Obviously, you know, it's a good fight, though, regardless. I mean, how many times have you seen Porter in a bad fight? And I'm guessing Crawford is not going to fight the way Kell Brook did the whole fight. You know what I mean? So this should be fun.
I am as well. One thing I wrote, too, it's like, you know, as amazing as Sean Porter's resume is, and I'd say it's easily top three in the sport today. Terrence Crawford is arguably be the best guy he's going to, you know, face. You could make the case that, you know, Errol Spence might be, let me rephrase.
Sure.
Errol Spence is the better welterweight, but, you know, Terrence Crawford, as far as, like, what he's accomplished in his career in a pound sense, I think he's right there with Errol Spence. I think no matter where you have him on your pound for pound list, as long as they're one
in
behind the
eye
other.
Test
I think, yeah, but he's
the,
right there.
He passed
and then,
the eye test major.
Yeah, and then it's weird. Like, people are saying that, you know, Victor Postol is, you know, Terrence Crawford's best win. I think Sean Porter has accomplished way, way more than Victor Postol. At the time, yes, Victor Postol was the best 140-pound fighter in the world. That was the best opponent for Terrence Crawford to face. But Sean Porter is easily the most accomplished fighter that Terrence Crawford has fought in his career.
Yeah, man. This is great. This is, we really, really needed this. And so you are – so now that they got this squared away – we do. We can anticipate in the coming weeks and maybe a month or whatever, we're going to start to get more of these fights announced. Like you just said, ESPN, maybe 10 or 11 straight weeks, whether it's ESPN, whether it's ESPN Plus or pay-per-view, we can start to see maybe a string of ESPN fights. They already got three on the books, so we're going to start to see maybe some stuff unfold there, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. They just announced their October 15th show, which I think is a very good fight between Emmanuel Navarrete and Joel Gonzalez. I think that's a terrific featherweight fight. Then obviously, the Crawford quarter, that's the big news. October 30th, I know they're trying to finalize. I'm pretty sure it's going to be Joe Smith and his mandatory, I believe it's Umar Salamov. But that's not finalized yet. I'm not going to give away top ranks or schedule. But, you know, some fights fights that kind of have to get done. But there's a lot of good stuff to be in there. October 23rd, you know, they just announced that last week, Jamel Herring and Shakur Stevenson. That's a four-hour car drive for me. I can't wait for that. You know, I always got to be there for my man Jamel. And, you know, this is, same situation where as much as Jamel has accomplished, Shakur Stevenson's easily the best. And as much as Shakur Stevenson passes the eye test, that's a huge test for him. He hasn't put anyone as good as Jamel Herring. I'm not going to say Joel Gonzalez is as good as Jamel, and that's Shakur Stevenson's best opponent today. So, this, much like Crawford Porter, a great two-way test, and fitting that Jamel Herring and Terrence Crawford are stable mates. So, that's a anxious times for their camp coming up. So, really, really can't wait for these fights. So, top rank and then going all the way through, they're going to have the show on Heisman Week. I think that fight should be getting announced hopefully sometime this week. They're trying to finalize that. That main event, everyone's been speculating about it, but I know they had to get the money right in order to get to the finish line. I'm not sure that they're there yet or if they will get there, but I do believe that fight will be announced in the coming days. And there's going to be a lot to look forward to on the ESPN side. And now that this is done, obviously PBC gets to fill in the blanks as well. You know, they just announced that tickets are going on sale tomorrow for Canelo and Caleb Plant. Obviously, they got the joint pay-per-view with Top Rank on October 9th. And then, Showtime is going to start filling up their dates. We're going to see some more Fox. I don't know what to expect from Fox, but we're going to see some more dates coming out of them. And, there's not a lot of year left, and there's still a lot of fights to be made. So that's the good news. It's going to be a very, very loaded fall and early winter schedule.
Yeah, and I know from intel locally that the Armory is going to have a December card. I'm assuming that's going to be that last Fox card of the year like they do. Mm-hmm. That's just an assumption. I don't know. But I'm assuming Jamal James will be on that and whatnot. Maybe there'll be a double dip. Maybe there'll be – Jamal needs to get in the ring and fight. You know, he's got to fight the fight, too. It's just like when the hell are you going to schedule it, and obviously I'm not talking to him. But and then obviously Morrell, David Morrell Jr. might pop on that as well, and that would be a great way to close the year. Any more info? Have you heard any kind of anything about this PBC Fox thing, being that we're in September and being that they only have like one or two Fox dates left on the deal as far as the three-year deal with some sort of extension that we heard about maybe in the last 6 to 8 months or something like that? Any kind of movement? It's tough because Al keeps it real tight, to the vest, obviously. And a lot of people were saying, no, it's over. All of a sudden they had a Fox deal. So, the Paramount Plus, the this, the that, any kind of anything out there, Jake? You don't have to be specific, but anything out there?
Well, all I can say is that everyone, for pretty much since the inception of PBC, we've been shoveling dirt on Al Heyman's grave. He's been knocking that dirt away. Al Heyman's going to continue to do that. I would not bring up the shovels just yet. That's about as much as I could say. But obviously, they just announced two shows this weekend. That's, nothing earth-shattering, but it's, a couple of fun FS1 cards, some prospects, which is where these fighters belong. The prospects shouldn't be headlining Fox shows, but that's that's, you know, well, whatever. That, you know, that's just, like, right. What we have to live with. But they are on the right platform, and I like it because some of these guys were supposed to fight this weekend on the non-televised on the card of what should have been the unification fight between Stephen Fulton and Brandon Figueroa. So I'm glad that those guys don't have to lose out on a date. Now they get to, you know, fight on these shows. Expect some more FS1 shows throughout the year. And like I said, I'm not here to tell PBC's business, but I fully expect to see, you know, Fox content in 2022.
Yeah, and they do owe us 12 FS1s unless it got budgeting cut. So, you know, maybe this is what they're going to do with their fall. We'll see. One more thing. What the hell's going on with Matchroom USA, and can they, beyond the Estrada Troglodyte fight, can they close strong? Because if they can join the fray, we might close just like last fall, Jake, when we were up here singing praises and having a great time last fall. Remember that, Jake? It seems like a long time
absolutely.
Ago now.
Yeah, it does. I'm not even going to say can they close strong. They have to close strong. There's just no question. I mean, it's just I think I could be mistaken. I think the last Matchroom USA show was Devin Haney back in May, and then they did the show with Canelo in June. I do believe there's supposed to be a show, another Canelo show in Mexico. Not Canelo on the show, but, you know, Matchroom and Canelo Promotions.
Oh, right,
I don't know if it's going to be in October or November. It just seems like the timeline keeps getting pushed back. They were supposed to have a show this weekend. You know, they couldn't get that one done. My understanding was that last weekend they were prepared to announce the, you know, the rubber match between Juan Francisco Estrada and Chocolatito Gonzalez. And then Chocolatito, you know, reportedly suffered COVID. He tested positive for COVID, so they had to delay those plans. So now that fight gets pushed back to November, and then we get a different type of show in October. I do believe they were trying to push for two shows in October, but one of the dates was supposed to be October 2nd, and that's already, you know, right around the corner. I mean, that's that. They're to the point that they know now the show pretty much, you know, by the time this segment is done, I mean, that's it. That's 2.5 weeks out. It could be just one show, and it's just unfortunate. There's so much potential with the zone, but they very clearly put all their eggs in Matchroom Boxing's basket. And it's unfortunate because both boys had good contact, but there's just so much dysfunction on that side that we're not getting, you know. Both boys put on some damn good shows when they've been given the dates, but they're not given any dates. It's like Matchroom gets to fill in for 1 to 2 dates per month first, and then, you know, Golden Boy gets to fill in the blanks, I guess, from there. But they have a big problem, too, because they can't get their bits on their airways. You know, the zone wants to know when Ryan Garcia is fighting next. And Golden Boy doesn't have an answer because
right.
they don't believe they have the relationship with Ryan Garcia that they project, you know, to the boxing sphere. You know, they make it seem like, you know, they're running his career, but they have to check in with him. And, you know, there's a disconnect there as well. So, you know, if they can't tell the zone when their biggest star is fighting, then, you know, they're just... They're not going to be in their favor. But at the same time, Matchroom isn't giving them any dates either. Golden Boy's had a show every month. You know, they've been doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So that also doesn't help when Oscar De La Hoya goes on Twitter and starts shitting on his own. You know, talking about him taking our business to Triller and, you know, celebrating them. So, you know, that's just all
right.
the
way Yeah, exactly.
But, it's a shame, man, because it just seems like I don't know what, you know, the zone's remaining budget is for, you know, the rest of the year. But there's... You know, they're going to get to the point where any dates they come up with, they're going to be competing with a very heavy schedule.
Yeah, and, you know, people start to wonder, like, hey, I got this subscription. Can we get some fights here? They did actually have a good opening quarter. You know, they had a good opening first quarter. They had a great March. They had a solid-ass March. And then they just kind of fell off overall. And obviously we know the second quarter and the fourth quarter of 2019 was phenomenal. So
it's very unfortunate, but, you know, because, like I said, up through, you know, late May, you know, it's like the zone weekend, you know, people want to dump on their schedule that they're spending too much money, but they have produced several fight of the year contenders. And, you know, the second fight between Estrada and Joe Pito was certainly, you know, among the year's best. But, again, it's just like, you know, I even, you know, last year, you know, during the pandemic, I understood, you know, it's like, I told myself I was never going to again do an annual subscription. So I did feel like by that point I did get my money's worth. So, but this year it's like at the point where I did subscribe to the annual sub, I was like, right now I'm kind of looking. I'm like, I don't know. I might regret this decision. decision. So, like I said, hopefully they come in with some bangers in the final 3 months. But they're running out of time to really shape up even the October 16th card, which seemingly is on the books, even though it's not going to be the third fight between Estrada and Gonzalez. So, you know, if that card isn't banger, that leaves them with November and December, unless, you know, we can get, you know, something huge out of Golden Boy.
Yeah, we haven't gotten those 16 cards year, and the 12 just top to bottom awesome fights, and then remember the four bangers? We were just going to get pay-per-view level, all this stuff, and it's falling flat on their face. But hopefully, you know, they do go up. Obviously, without Canelo, it does sound like the way they talked about it, the way the rumors are out there, without Canelo, that the budget available is going to be a lot less. So we're talking about Triller a little bit. Now, I like the idea. I mean, that obviously for old heads like us, or middle-aged, let's say middle-aged heads like us, let's not put us in the old category just yet. But, that the locks and Dipset fights in that. I mean, that Jadakiss just destroyed that. I've watched that like four times with friends and stuff like that. I loved it. Now, tonight, I do like the boxing and the fact Joe and Ja Rule. I like this combination that Triller's got going, so I got to give him credit there. And, hey, I forgot that it was $3, but, hey, three freaking bucks. That's really not much to ask for. So I'm willing to overlook that for sure. But what I'm not willing to overlook is Triller with these not just exhibitions but a late fill-in 50, basically 59-year-old, saying it's a real fight. Then we find out it's not, but it is, but it's not. It just, to me, this is, I know they've now all of a sudden come out and said, Kevin Aoli got a quote, a couple other people did too, saying, hey, we're going to stop with these exhibitions, yada, yada, yada. But this last weekend was just horrendous, man. And we knew Holyfield probably shouldn't be in the ring, but he got just grazed with the shot, and he was already out on his feet almost. I mean, it was ridiculous, Jay.
Let me fully disclose. I did not order that card. I did not watch that card in its entirety. I saw enough of it just to, you know, kind of justify the fact that I didn't camp in for the night. But, I just don't know what to say anymore. I mean, it's horrible that, you know, you don't trust the platform to begin with. And that they go in with a show like this where the entire, you know, the entire promotion is just one big lie. And then it just seems like every promise, you know, it's like Triller is too new to have already broken this many promises. So, you know, we're talking about, there's actually a Trillerverse card on right now as we're, you know, doing this segment. There was no promotion for that. You know, for a big event like that, and I kind of got on when Showtime did the Jake Paul pay-per-view. That was only 3 weeks ago. It's like, this is just been one brutal summer. You know, it's like where, you know, with that, a show like that, you know, they kept talking about how many eyeballs Jake Paul brings to the sport. Why not introduce your entire schedule? Now, I get it that, you know, there were sponsorship issues and, you know, it was a Showtime event, but it belonged to Jake Paul, it belonged to Barstool Sports. And, you know, I get all that, but, you know, that's, you know, have your guys there, have, you know, Stephen Fulton there, you know, Brandon Figueroa, even though, you know, but, you know, anyone that's on your schedule, David Benavidez, anyone that you want to build up as a future star, Boots Ennis. These are the guys that absolutely should have been there and should have been talking to. You know, I remember past Showtime events. That was always the thing. It's like you had a big event. You know, they have all, you know, people on the TV shows that are in attendance. You have people that are on the fight schedule. That's, you know, that's supposed to be the point of view. You know, for events like this, it's about, you know, building up your brand, you know, introducing your brand to a wider audience, you know, especially with someone like, you know, Jake Paul, where, you know, you say there's more fans than ever watching. So that was the part that I didn't get. But, and with Triller, they had a fight 3 days later. And this is actually a decent card. You know, Pablo Cano and Danielito Zaria, you know, it was a good fight. It was supposed to happen a month ago. It's back on the schedule. I found out from Cotto's people like a week ago. I said, oh, yeah, you know, we're fighting next week. It was originally supposed to be in L.A. Then everything got moved when the September 11th show got moved from California to Florida. So did the Tonight Show. But there was no promotion for that. The first press release from Triller came yesterday when they weighed in. And even that was like, oh, by the way, they weighed in. You know, here's the fights that you didn't know about that are happening tomorrow. So, you know, I wrote a story about Zaria and Cano last week. Franchon Cruz, Zern was supposed to be on the show. And the thing that I felt so bad with her, she was supposed to fight for the Undisputed Championship. She's sitting here doing a steady stream of interviews on the day of her wedding anniversary. And then a day later, she finds out it's all one big lie. You know, they told her that they couldn't get the visa booked in time. for her opponent, Elena Cerruz, who has the WBA and IBF super middleweight belts. So then we found out travel was never booked for either one of them, and there was never really any intention to have this fight on this show. And then they still don't have a platform for it. Like, okay, well, if that's, you know, if it's really a travel visa, why not try to put it on KPMO Lopez's, you know, a rescheduled fight in October? They were supposed to fight on the same show in June. Why not package them together? It's just, it's disgusting. Like, you know, the fights that you're looking forward to, there's just, like, no real plan for those events. And that makes me frustrated, like, you know, because we think all the boys are going to be leaving the zone, and they say they're going to take all the business to Charlotte. It's like, that's a dangerous move, because I'm not convinced. You know, we're talking about Fox Sports and, you know, whether they're going to be around in 2022, which I firmly do believe we will. I'm not sure Charlotte's going to go beyond October 4th. So, and I think, you know, from what we've gotten from them, I'm not sure if I want to see that. It's just, they've been so awful for the sport. You know, that was the big promise when, you know, they disrupted that first bid. They did more than $6 million for Lopez's fight with George Kambosos, and that was the big promise. It's like, well, we only got him for one fight. You know, he's going to come in as a lightweight champion. He's going to come out as a superstar. That's, you know, it's become an embarrassment at this point. So, yeah. You know, tickets just went on sale today. The fight's 3 weeks away. I don't know. You know, maybe they'll pack the house.
Same
maybe
week.
They'll legitimately sell tickets.
Same week as, isn't that the same week as Fury and Wilder just early in the week?
It's
Monday night?
It's 5 days before. It's 5 days before, yeah. And the price, you know, originally Triller CEO Ryan Cavanaugh, he told, I believe it was Coppinger and maybe a couple other reporters, that it was going to be a $19.99 event or something where if you ordered the Triller Pass, you get it at a discount. Now it's a $50 pay-per-view event. 5 days before, you know, the fight that everyone was already planning to watch that week. So it's, like I said, we expect, you know, a new series to come in. You know, they make a big introduction, and eventually it devolves into what we normally expect of the sport. But like I said, Charlotte, this is, it's, they haven't even been in the sport for a year, and it's already become this. So
right.
It's just, but yeah, Saturday's show, just, you know, all the elements into it. I'm not going to get too political. You know, I understand there's an audience that maybe wanted to see, you know, Donald Trump and his son. Certainly the fans that were there were all for it, but it's just, I don't know. I just don't know what to
do.
No,
but they were,
you know,
they were talking to Obama, Jake. They were talking to Obama, remember?
But I just, you know, I laughed because I know there was a quote saying, you know, with Kavanaugh saying that, you know, that their events, it's like, you know, it's not supposed to appeal to the boxing fans. I guess, you know, to that, boxing fans are saying, you know, no shit. It's, you know, it certainly doesn't appeal to us. I don't know who it's appealing to, but, yeah, that –
right.
I don't even mind the exhibitions. It just can't be a complete cluster like as was the case last week. That was just an embarrassment to any medium, not just to boxing, but, you know, to entertainment in general.
Yeah, and this Kavanaugh guy, this is me talking, but this guy will say anything. And I get it. I get it in the line of work he's been in, and it works for him because he gets quotes and people buy it up and slurp it up, but the dude just got done saying Jake's a novelty act. Now he's got $30 million to fight Vito Belfort.
Yeah.
Like, which one is it? You couldn't afford $10 million, right, to fight Woodley, but now all of a sudden you can afford, like, it's just, this dude, man. And he was talking about Jake as, like, the crossover Muhammad Ali back in April. You know what I mean? Like, this guy,
exactly.
It just, oh my God. All right. I'm sorry, Jake. I went a little too overboard.
Well, no, but the unfortunate part, too, is, like, because we're just talking about all these fights that are coming up in the fall, but yet here we are talking about Paul, we're talking about Triller, and it's, like, that's the stuff that's attracting, you know, the non, you know, hardcore boxing fan. I'm not even going to say mainstream fan, but really the entertainment fan. Like, that's what's attracting them to the sport. And we're showing them, you know, if, like, if this is supposed to be representative of boxing, we're kind of showing them, yes, every negative stereotype you've ever seen in a movie, it's actually not that bad. It's worse. That's what we're showing them with these events. It's so unfortunate.
It is, man. It's a sad state of affairs. You know, I did, like most thought, last Friday, ESPN Plus card should have been postponed for obvious reasons. But on paper, and then once we got into the ring, the card itself had some competitive fights. Obviously, the one that would have been fight of the night, you know, got stopped early from a broken nose. But what'd you think of the card in general? And then, you know, I mean, I did think Velda snuck by, but that was just another slap in the face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned, you know, the card. That was my whole thinking, you know, throughout the fight week. Because I remember originally when that fight was first, when the show was first discussed, people saying, oh, look at these fights that are on the card. I'm looking at the undercard. I'm like, this is actually a pretty damn good undercard. Like, these are some aggressively matched prospect fights. I'm like, I was really looking forward to it. And all of that got lost in the shuffle because of, you know, all the elements that went into the main event. So,
right.
You know, again, it's like, you know, we're supposed to talk about something good, and then we get talking about, you know, we're left talking about the negative part of the sport. So, yeah, I was talking to somebody.
Nakatani Acosta would have been just a barn burner had it been going. And then we did get an upset with Flores Jr. Getting beat by Luis Alberto Lopez.
He's on one hell of a run. I mean, this is, I think, his fifth win in a row, and three of them in fights where he probably, you know, on paper wasn't supposed to win. So, you know, we actually are part of the ratings board for the, you know, the Transnational Boxing Ratings Board. We just introduced him into our top 10. I believe he entered at number 9 this week based on that win. So that was just a fantastic performance by him. And it was on a card, like every prospect was matched, you know, fairly aggressively. So, you know, Xander Zayas, we saw he was tested. You know, I give those guys all the credit in the world, too. They're fighting in the outdoor arena in blazing hot Tucson. So, you know, it's people like, oh, they need to do this, they need to do that. Like, they just need to stay hydrated to get through this damn fight. You know, you can't care about too much if it's not the best performance. But, you know, credit to them. You know, they all went through it. I thought it was a very good card. The main event was actually pretty, you know, a lot of people were making a big deal about the, you know, the outcome. Obviously, with, you know, Valdez and the whole testing, you know, drug testing thing, should he have fought to begin with? You know, they let him fight. Then once the fight happened, it was like, I was kind of really underwhelmed by it. And everyone was so passionate about, you know, how come they said I should have won. He was robbed. I'm like, oh. He jumped out to a very strong start. And, you know, and we saw it coming. Like, everyone on Twitter, like, you go on anyone's timeline, it's like he's letting the fight slip away. For whatever reason, he's making some weird decisions in the ring, and he's letting Oscar Valdez back into the fight. So I thought it was personally a 114-113 fight either way. I didn't agree with the point deduction. Once the point deduction happened, I thought Valdez at least should have been deducted when he pretty much committed the same foul a round later. You know, it's like
right.
He got warnings where Conceição was getting, you know, losing points. I thought that was, you know, unfair. One judge that admitted that, you know, he showed, you know, blatant favoritism towards the defending champion. That's, you know, just something else the sport didn't need. I give him credit, you know, that he came forward. He admitted that he had a horrible scorecard. So I kind of sense that maybe he saw it coming. So I'm glad he got ahead of it. I'm glad he's not going to, you know, judge another fight. But this goes into, like, I'm thinking back to when, you know, Michael Fox was placed in the same situation. This is where your manager needs to come in. You know, if the promoter isn't going to take care of it, the manager needs to step in. These judges and the referee, they were all on BoxRec for, I want to say, at least 2 weeks. Because my concern was that Rocky Burke was the referee for one of the fights. You know, and like I'm looking at these officials, like, these guys are pretty weak, but this is where a manager needs to step in and say, no, we don't want this guy, you know, especially, you know, Valdez is his WBC champion, Stephen Blee, you know, you look on his Twitter feed, he's very clearly a WBC judge. You know, you knew he was going to go that way. It's like, you know, let's get some more neutral guys. Let's, you know, get a judge from Brazil or, you know, something where, you know, my guy at least, you know, stands a chance. But you don't wait till after the fact and say, I can't believe, you know, boxing screwed me over again. You know, because you expect boxing to screw you over. That's your job as a manager, to make sure your fighter is in that position. And managers, they're just not doing their job. You know, like I said, I go back to a month ago when Michael Fox was in that same situation. You know, in, you know, Minneapolis, the Army is a great, you know, venue, but you don't want to see things like that happen. And you wonder, it's like, you know, how the hell did his team put him in a position where he's fighting, essentially fighting a WBA fighter for a WBA title with WBA judges? What, you know, what outcome did they expect? Now, granted, Michael Fox did everything he should have done to have won that fight. That decision was far worse
than
any case you can make for Conceição. But managers, they just need to do a better job of protecting their fighters in these situations. And we've never even heard from that side regarding the whole drug testing thing. Like, Conceição had the power to walk away and say, I don't want the fight. Now, you know, people are going to say he's walking away from a payday, but no, Top Rank still owes him a fight at that point, though. You know, I don't see how Top Rank could have said you have to go through with this fight. You know, Deontay Wilder walked away. I mean, even Berman Saverne walked away from the fight with Alexander Povetkin once Povetkin tested positive
for
the fight. You know, Povetkin wound up fighting Sean Duopar, but, you know, who the hell is Berman Saverne when he could walk away from a fight like that? So, you know, that's the thing that I hated about how all this was handled. Everyone that was in a position of power to do something about the fight ultimately did nothing at all. Now, I get it, the Top Rank's role in this, they were just going to let the chips fall as they may. If Valdez got suspended or if the commission didn't allow him to be licensed, they had a contingency plan in place. The casino had a contingency plan in place. So there was an avenue where Valdez could have not been allowed to fight, but everyone just kind of, you know, they just, no, it was, it turned out to be a dog on the show, and it was just very unfortunate.
They looked the other way, and I know you got to go, Jake. Any piece that you're kind of brewing right now, putting in the stew, putting in spices, anything coming up that we should be on the lookout for there, Jake?
Yeah, well, I touched on this.
Because I'm sure you could do some kind of lawyer talk, some kind of courtroom stuff happening. For you to get.
Well, so there is two of them working on. Franchon Cruz, I touched on that. I'm just going to touch on how, like, just the industry has really disrespected her. And, you know, she's made a point of it, too. It's like, it's just not, you know, it's for whatever reason, like, African-American women just can't thrive in boxing. You know, I mean, look at, you know, Clarissa Shields should be a superstar.
Yeah.
She has to go fight MMA just to stay active, and now then she's going to fight in England after that, so.
Yeah, now she's got a Sky Sports deal.
Yeah, exactly. And then one interesting lawsuit I'm still sifting through is Dillian White is at war with the WBC once again. So, but he's suing them. He, apparently, they, whatever settlement agreement they had, Dillian White was not privy to all of the documents that should have been made available in that case. So now he's, you know, on the hunt for that information. And he essentially wants to be named champion, and I kind of don't blame him. You know, Tyson Fury's held that title ransom. We're hoping that he fights next month. You know, a lot of us are kind of expecting that fight to fall apart. And, you know, maybe Tyson Fury winds up retiring because that's the only way he's going to get out of not fighting Deontay Wilder a third time. But after that, it's, you know, Dillian White is going to want to make sure that he gets to fight the winner, and I don't blame him for not having any faith in the WBC. So anyway, so that lawsuit's in the hopper, and then so those are two stories I'm working on, and then just in addition to Archer, just always remaining on the grind.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate you. I'll let you get back on the grind. You have yourself a good night, Jake, and enjoy, if you see it, the Fat Joe Ja Rule.
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait for that. I've always loved Fat Joe. So a lot of people think Ja Rule's catalog is a little too deep for my man, but I'm really looking forward to that now.
It's in New York. Everyone's going to know Joe's songs. Come on.
That's
you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, exactly. All right. Well, thanks for those having me on, Chris. That was a pleasure.
All right, buddy. You take it easy. Have a good one.
You as well. Thank you.
All right. Yes, sir. All right. That was Jake Donovan. If he's not the best, show me. I'm all ears, like Obama. Sorry, I had to take that from Black Thought. Jake Donovan, BoxingScene.com, senior writer. He's got some more items doing up. You know, I like that Dillian White is getting his ducks in the row. He's like, hey, man, if anything happens with Fury's, Who knows what happens with Fury? If anything, he goes into retirement or something like that, boom, I get the title shot. Because I still like that fight, Dillian White Wilder. I really like that fight. I think it's got that sloppiness to it. They both have power. And obviously the lead-up. I mean, really, dude, the lead-up? The lead-up will be silly, dude. It'd be pretty fun, I got to say. Some people don't like Wilder. Some people don't like Dillian White. Some probably don't like them both or whatever. But to be honest with you, sign me the F up for that fight. I like that fight. Not just because of how much shit they're going to talk, but I think it's a fun fight in the ring. I really do. So there's a variety of things that we'll talk about. Had to get Jake in and out. He, you know, I just asked him last night, so it was really nice of him to stop in. He was on a time limit. So we got him in, and we didn't have to, you know, have his phone pop on and off like it did last time. So that's dope. That's really dope. So there is going to be some items. Obviously, we led with Crawford and Porter. I'm going to kind of clean up some of this stuff as far as recap, give you my thoughts on, you know, that ESPN Plus card. Like I said, the main event should have been postponed, and they should have done a thorough investigation, but it didn't happen. I get why the Tribal Athletic Commission, I get why they went with it, because they're probably looking at WADA. You know, they got VADA, WADA, and USADA, right? So WADA makes the official rules, right? So I get why they did it. I really don't. Could they have stopped it? Sure. But, you know, if WADA says it's good, I could understand that. I actually get that part. My thing is the WBC skirting the VADA stuff. But, you know, we talked about that last week. We're not going to get too detailed into that. But I do want to preview Crawford Porter. It's funny because some folks, you know, just destroy Terrence Crawford. Some people lift him up to this pedestal. You know, it's kind of a variety with Crawford. You know what I mean? some people now all of a sudden have lost interest in this fight as if they've been negotiating for years or something like that. You know, it's not the easiest negotiation. And, you know, like Jake said, the top pay-per-view numbers this would do is 250. And he even said, you know, it's not – that's a maybe. That's like – I don't even know if I put that in the maybe category. You know, you got to see the rollout for ESPN+, Plus, but I probably don't think it'd do that. I really don't think it would do that. But – so it takes some time, you know. But to say you lost interest now – you so you want Terrence Crawford to fight someone. I get it at welterweight. I totally get that. You know, in many ways, although that guarantee upfront money – that he got in that extension deal back in 2018. I don't really think too many, I don't know. Maybe Matchroom USA for DAZN, maybe they give him that kind of money. I don't even think Al would give him that kind of money per fight. Well, maybe he would because he'd have the opponents to match him up. But clearly, that Matchroom throwing out a bunch of money and overpaying for fighters and fights had something to do with that high guarantee. So it rubbed me the wrong way that he did the extension, knowing what that meant. But in the same breath, you know, that's good money. You know what I mean? So I'm just happy for Terrence. I'm happy for Porter. And like I said, some folks, all of a sudden, now they don't want to see this fight. I mean, what the fuck is this? Which one do you want? You know, there's so many things to complain about in boxing. And we do it here. Me and Jake were just talking about it, right? Some of the bullshit going on. We get it. But this should not be the bullshit that you're now disinterested in. I'm not here to tell you what entertainment value means to you. You know, maybe some people don't like the Versus, for instance, because they don't like hip-hop. You know, that whatever. It is what it is. I happen to like that. I'm an old head. That shit is right up my lane. That Jadakiss performance made my summer. I'm not from New York, okay? I'm a white dude from Minnesota. But, you know, in Minneapolis, we do get a little lit, as you saw a couple summers ago. But anyway, that shit was so fun. So I gave credit for Versus, or not, well, it's Versus, but the Triller thing where they had fights, then they cleared out the ring, broke it down, and they did the Versus thing right on the ring, just like they're doing right now as we speak. There's actually some good fights on tonight. So I give them credit for that. But this exhibition pay-per-view stuff, you can miss me on that. You can miss me on that. So, yeah, we're going to get into a variety of stuff when it comes to it. I do want to recap some of that. Speaking of, I did see the Jonah Carroll, Andy Vences fight. That shit was tight. I had it 5-5. If I had to pick a winner, I'd probably pick Andy. But it was close. It was a close fight. One judge actually did score at 95-95, the other two 97-93. And, you know, early on, I would say, let me look at my scorecard. For sure, I gave Andy the first two. His jab and right hands were pretty nice. The pace kind of picked up in this fight. The pace was just up and down and up and down. So that part of it kind of sucked. But I thought, you know, although you saw Carroll land a few solid shots, I don't know if it was good enough in that second round. I thought he landed the better shots, but it did kind of slow down the second half of that third round. But I gave Carroll that one. The fourth round was a close round, gave Carroll the fifth. But by that time, like I said, this fight, it just slowed way down. I think a few better shots, like that looping right hand and whatnot. Then I gave the sixth round to Andy. He started actually bringing the fight, especially early in that, behind a really snappy jab. He started bringing the fight to Carroll. I gave Carroll the seventh. That's what was good about this fight. You know, it was back and forth and back and forth, and a lot of it came down to maybe three or four better, cleaner shots from each guy. You know what I mean? And that's what I think the seventh round came to. Gave Andy the eighth. Kind of in and out, landing some okay shots. The ninth back to Carroll, close round, but I thought the combination of body and head, I believe it was the right hooks that were doing that. And then Andy Venice, the way he countered and timed him, he would counter and pivot or counter and reset. the way he was timing him, I gave him that 10th round. So like I said, I can see five clear rounds for Andy. Let's see, one, two, three. I got four clear rounds for Jonah Carroll. So it could be a draw, maybe 5-4-1 Andy, maybe 6-4, whatever the case is. He did not get the nod. And like I mentioned, like, you know, I only saw – someone posted it on Twitter, the fight, basically the whole fight. It didn't last long, right, between Belfort and Holyfield. Literally, the first shot he got hit with, was it even a clean shot? It was like, was it grazing? I don't even remember, but he was just all over the place. It was a sad state of affairs, like I mentioned. So I don't really want to talk much about that. Anderson Silva got a win, knocked out Tito Ortiz. Ortiz talking a bunch of shit. Then after the fight, it was kind of a combination of, I guess Silva gave up better seats on the plane. He I don't know. Tito said something, he filmed something saying, hey, Silva, you know, gave up some seats like in first class or something to us, and that was really cool. But before, he was saying, oh, Silva's cheating, like he's on PEDs, because in the vaccine, there's PEDs in the vaccine, and that's why I won't take the vaccine. You know, Tito's just a bullshitter. But anyway, you know, I didn't need to see two former MMA guys pass their prime boxing. To me, that just didn't, you know, go get your money, Anderson Silva, but, didn't really do much for me personally. Like I said, just me personally. The Valdez fight, I did think, and Canseco, to me, that was a tight-ass fight. I think Jake hit it on the nose with the 114-113, either way. Maybe Valdez 7-5. I'd have been okay with 6-6. That the thing about that deduction. What round was that? Was that the 9th round? Bullshit penalty deduction, just for tapping the back of the head. We see this all the time. People actually getting hit in the side of the head, in the ear, under the ear, in the back of the head. We see it all the time, and they don't get in trouble. No, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But there's warnings and all that type of stuff. And this one, and maybe I missed the warning. You know, I was kind of listening to something while I was watching it. Maybe I missed the warning. But to the little tap, you know what pissed me off is it's one thing for the – clearly he was coming in contact with the back of his head. I get that part. That's illegal. We get that. But what about when they're tied up, because they were tied up at that point, wasn't Valdez hitting the back of Canseco? I mean, he was hitting him in the liver, for Christ's sake. Like, he was hitting him in the back while they were on a break. And that's actually, if you look at it, to me it looked like Canseco, that's why he did that. It was more like, all right, dude, I'm going to give you a little, you give me a little of this, I'm going to do that. It was just like returning the favor. And then it just felt so... like Jake said, so WBC driven. It's a perfect example with Minneapolis and the WBA driven at the Armory. This one was just like, come on, dude. The scorecard, 117-110, obviously shitty. Both of them were 115-112, meaning 7-5. I'm okay with the 7-5 for Valdez. I did think it was 6-6. I would have liked to have it a draw. I'd like to see a rematch. That's not going to happen. Really cool amphitheater, though. Very cool venue. Big up to Raging Babe and whoever else put that show on. Well, I mean, ESPN and Top Rank, of course. But so I feel like somebody else was involved with that. But they did a great job. They got some folks out there. So that was cool to see a live crowd like that. Like I said, that venue looked like it was kind of custom made. I just thought Valdez, for boxing, to finish that up, I thought Valdez just closed strong. I gave him the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th. In the 12th, who'd I give the 10th to? 10th was close. I gave Canseco, who I thought landed better shots, in the 11th. You know, I gave him the first three rounds, or three out of the first four. Let's see, one, two. I gave him four out of the, I just looked. The second round was close, but I gave him four out of the first five rounds, and he still, it was either a draw or he lost. You know, he would be countering pretty well, Kansei So. He would, from time to time, like, you know, jab right hand. He had a stiff jab in the power shots. He would just kind of throw him in from time to time. But, you know, I remember this in the fifth round. He needs to stop clowning. Like, you can jab and counter, but sometimes he was just jabbing and moving, and sometimes that jab wouldn't even leave, you know, land. So it was kind of like, well, dude, like, you're not up that much. You haven't dropped him. It's not like he's landing these flush punches where Valdez is in trouble. So I don't know, dude. Valdez, though, did start to get his hooks, his left hooks, right hooks. I mean, he missed plenty of them, too. But I think the third round was probably his best round. And then the sixth, like I said, sixth, seventh, eighth, he basically, you know, those counter left hooks, and the right hand to the body, left hand to the body, you know, it kind of, I thought maybe the first couple rounds would be very competitive because I did see Kansei Sao be able to jab and time and move. But then I did think Valdez would get to him a little bit earlier and just wear him down. He didn't really wear him down. But, well, it's funny. I said I gave Valdez, oh, no, I did. Yeah, that was 10-8. That's right. Valdez left hook to the body. Once he starts wearing you down, you know, it's going to be tough. You know what I mean? It's going to be tough. He's definitely a handful when it comes to that. But it wasn't a great performance, and I just think we got to just assume Oscar Valdez. We don't know which one's going to show up. You know, I did actually see someone tweet something about him that, you know, he wasn't able to sleep much because of all this drama before the fight. And I think someone, maybe we'll talk about that in the boxing Twitter segment. I kind of, didn't someone tweeted, I think, that actually one of the side effects of that stimulant that was in him, that actually, it is actually, you know, sleep issues. You have sleep issues if you take that. So, it is what it is. Acosta and Nakatani, I did favor Nakatani in this one, and I thought it was pretty clear for him. The last maybe 30, 40 seconds of the first round, the left hand landed really, really hard. He had a flurry around, you know, along with that. The second round was a fun action round. That is when Acosta broke his nose. The left hooks to the head and body, though, you know, to me, Nakatani was just the better fighter. I thought that going in. I think you can see it. And then, you know, come, what was it, third or fourth round? I think it was the fourth round. The ref called it, so the broken nose just, you know, not going to be able to do it. So that was a bummer, you know, because I thought, you know, action-wise, a bunch of us assumed that that'd be the fight of the weekend. And it probably, on an action standpoint, was going to be if it was allowed to, you know, carry on. Some people had a big issue with it getting stopped. It was kind of strange, like, during a round to stop it and be like, hey, man, you know, let's take a look at it. It's like, well, why don't you just take a look at it between rounds or right before the round's going to start, you know? That was a little funky, and sometimes when you do, not that they don't have cards in Phoenix and Arizona, because they do, but not a bunch of them, you know, so sometimes when you do, just like we talked about Minneapolis or other places, Cleveland, you know, when that Jake Paul Cleveland show had some stuff where you're like, well, I think they missed two knockdowns on that card, you know what I mean? So, but Nakatani wins. He's now, I think, 22-0 with like 16, 17, I don't know, knockouts. Xanier Zayas, is that his name? He beat Sanchez really easy. Looked pretty good doing it as well. And then we get to Luis Alberto Lopez, 22-2, now 23-2, beat the unbeaten Gabriel Flores Jr. And it was one-sided. I mean, I don't know how you guys scored it at home. The scorecards read two of them, 190 and then the other one was 98-92. I had it about 9-1, maybe 8-2, but it was tough to find rounds for Gabriel Flores. You know, the overhand right landed clean pretty much all night. He would kind of, Lopez, I'm speaking of, would kind of, you know, work the body as well. Started landing uppercuts. A lot of it came off jab. You'd have Flores land late, but he was moving so much. And Lopez just kept finding the holes in Gabriel Flores Jr.'s defense, mostly jabs from Flores in movement and too much movement, not even really pot shotting. You know, the fourth and fifth were the same. The sixth round, it seemed like Flores had a double jab going at times, and he landed some nice left hooks. Whereas, you know, and that's not even a sure round for Flores. It's just Lopez did some good body work. He was kind of in pot shot mode in that one, reading from my notes. But then seventh round, Lopez just starts unloading to the head and body. And a late left hook in the ninth round hurt him. So, you know, Flores made it through. It looked like the fight was going to get stopped, but it ended up not getting stopped. So, you know, it is what it is on that one. A lot of people thought Flores should, you know, the corner, his pop should just say, just stop the fight. And I agree with that. They probably should have stopped the fight, but he did make it through. So that about wraps it up. That about wraps it up. The most competitive fight of the week in Carol Venez. But we did get a fairly sizable upset, I'd have to say, with Alberto Lopez. I was impressed. I was impressed. And that's Luis Alberto, I should say. But I did like, you know, I remember talking about that last week, that fight. And, you know, I liked how he had a good showing, and then they put him in there with the prospect. You know what I mean? And even a handful, like maybe 2 years ago, he fought, didn't he fight, he fought Banez. He beat him. That was last year. He fought Ruben Villa. I remember that. But, you know, to me, it's like you beat Venez. That was a nice win for you. Boom, put him in there with Gabriel Flores Jr. So I really like that part of it. And like I said, it did get lost in the sauce with Oscar Valdez's issue. But the card itself was pretty solid. So you do have to give ESPN Plus Top Rank some credit for that card, because that was competitive. And, you know, I enjoyed it. And at least the main event was competitive, but it was a, you know, pretty mediocre fight as it goes. You know what I mean? But it is what it is. It is what it is. Now, as far as Crawford Porter, kind of going back to it, I really like this. I mean, I'm wondering if Porter is going to kind of go back to just, I want to get inside and I want to maul him. I mean, of course, he does have an issue sometimes of smothering his own punches. And you don't want to go in there blindly, because Mr. Counterpuncher, you know, Mr., you know, switch southpaw with the quickness and smoothness, Terrence Bud Crawford, you know, on one hand, do you want to try to outbody? The reason why I say is because, you know, since really, if you look at Sean Porter, he has tweaked his style, you know, to different results, albeit. I think he put it all together against Danny Garcia as far as in a win. And in the combat, he did actually box a little bit against Spence. But if you look at it against Granados, he didn't do that as much against Berto. Ugas, who else did he? Well, he was boxing a little bit against Formella. But my point is, it was not this head first, smother my punches, try to just beat you up. But maybe that's what you need against Terrence Crawford. Now, of course, use your jab. He's got a really good up jab when he uses it. Do that. But get on the inside, rough them up, use your physicality. I think you got to do that more than what you showed against Ugas or Danny Garcia, where you're really boxing too much, moving too much. Then again, it's not like we've seen Crawford coming forward against a high-level boxer on the outside, per se. You know, I mean, I thought it was very smart after he lost round one to Postal that he didn't lose another round probably because he switched it. He was on the back foot, and he was moving and countering well, and Postal, as we saw, was not a good come-forward fighter. So I don't know. It's a mixture of stuff on that one. I'm kind of torn as far as style-wise, you know what I mean? Exactly how that's going to go down, how that's going to look in the ring. Do you just go for the mauling style and say, screw it? Or, you know, do you – I don't know. I think you do. I think you go for it. I think you rough them up. I think you – if you miss a right hook or a left hook, an elbow follows, you hit him on the hip. You just try to get Terrence Crawford off of his game. And that may be hard to do, and it may put you on your butt. But I think that's the way you got to do it. As long as you do keep a fairly high guard, you don't want to leave your body open too much. But you don't really want to be at the end of Crawford's punches either, because he's very accurate, and it seems like he's very powerful. We haven't seen him against a top-level welterweight, but that would appear that that's what he's got. He's got more ways to win than Porter, in my opinion, even though, like I said, I want to give credit, and I have in the past, Porter has mixed it up a little bit. You know, I didn't think it was too effective against Ugas, but I did think it was against Danny Garcia, and if anyone was moving, you know, early to mid against, there wasn't much moving besides moving arms and hands with Spence and Porter. But Porter did move a little bit. Then you saw Spence later in the fight kind of take a half a step back, half a step back to the side, and then counter him and whatnot. But I think you kind of got to bring that bulldog style, but with your up jab. Go to the body. You know what I mean? I don't want him trying to outbox Terrence Crawford in the middle of the ring. I just don't see that happening. And sometimes when you get it in the actual ring, you look and you go, damn, this is working well. Maybe Crawford isn't as good as cutting off the ring. You know what I mean? Usually when he lands the big shot, that's when he starts to really take advantage, you know? And obviously Crawford, that's why I'm kind of saying maybe that up jab and the mauling and the body and all that overhand shots and all that, because Crawford has been hurt multiple times. And, you know, up until a couple years ago, maybe even more than a couple, he used to get hit a lot. Like at 35 and 40, some of that was just offensive-oriented, but he got hit a lot for my liking for a pound-for-pound guy. But, you know, at 40 and 47, it seems like he cleaned up some stuff. Obviously, Mean Machine, you know, did knock him down, even though, you know, it doesn't go in the books as a knockdown. I got news for you. It was probably a knockdown, but he wasn't hurt, you know what I mean? But I'm just happy it's happening. You know, I assumed just what Jake was saying, that not going to be enough revenue to do a split between ESPN and Fox. So it did sound like Fox was trying to land the fight, but ESPN did. So I'm happy in general for that because that's a damn good fight. Really looking forward to that. You know, as far as the weekend goes, there's not a ton to preview. I will in a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and bring in a great boxing mind, John, for his normal segment here. What's going on, John? Thanks for kind of coming in last moment here on a early or late afternoon, early evening, Tuesday night.
Oh, no problem, Chris, and thanks for the kind words as always, but I'm ready to go here, and I was just interested listening to your thoughts about Porter and Crawford, which, as we know, got confirmed today.
Yes, indeed, although, you know, we had a lot of people probably can't wait to stream the purse bit and everything like that. We got the deal done. I'm really, really happy that this fight's happening. We need to start stacking up fights so we can close really strong. You know, it sounds like the Figueroa and Fulton fight will happen later this year once Figueroa's okay. Same with Chocolatito Estrada. We know we got a couple other fights, so this was a nice addition, and hopefully we can stack some more on top of it. Just at your first glance, previewing this fight, how do you see these, you know, styles blend? Obviously, this is kind of the best fighter. I think it's safe to say, especially at welterweight, but in general, that Terrence Crawford will have fought. It's been a while since he's been in there with, like, a fight where you thought, okay, this might be close. I thought the post-out fight would be a little bit closer than what it turned out to be in the ring. How do you see this one playing out? And kind of what I was saying, you know, Porter has been mixing his style up minorly. Do you think he should keep doing that, or do you think he should bring out the bulldog in this one and just go that way? Kind of a, you know, maybe a more – like a still smart bulldog, if that makes sense. What do you think of this fight on paper heading in to the November 20th matchup?
Well, yeah, I think the only way for him to have a shot is to go to his classic bulldog style, which you correctly stated he's gotten away. Porter has been, as much as we all admire him, as much as he's fought the best right to the edge every time he's been in there, always gives it all he has. And I'm sure he will. But, you know, he's getting older, and I think part of that pulling back, like you said, you've made an example of two fights where he did it, two good examples. You know, he did that against Danny Garcia, and where I differ from you a little bit is I do think it was effective against Danny Garcia, and I think it surprised him, but I thought – I was in a bit of a minority on that one, but I thought Garcia did enough to win the fight.
Oh, that's
fight,
right.
You know?
That's right.
We
I
know
remember
Garcia's
you saying that.
Yeah, we know Garcia's all got, you know, always has activity problems, and that didn't necessarily change. But see, then in that fight, Porter was pulling back. I do think it surprised Garcia some and was pretty effective. I think that is where Porter draws on his amateur pedigree. You know, he's a guy that has a real good amateur pedigree, even though he always fought, you know, like a real mauler, a real bulldog, really crude in the pros. But he's gotten away from that. You know, he didn't even put any hurt on Formella. You know, the Ugas fight was really close. I did think Porter won that one. You know, I just thought Ugas didn't do enough. I think in the great run Ugas has been on, even though Porter's a tough opponent, I do think that was the one fight Ugas was off his game a little bit and got a little too cautious. Unlike the rest of the great comeback he made. So, you know, I think we've seen that more from Porter in recent years, and we're not seeing any power from him. And, you know, I think that hurts him a lot because Crawford, you know, starting out as a lightweight, I agree with your assessment. This is definitely the best welterweight that Crawford's going to fight and really is the best fighter he's going to fight in his career. I agree with that assessment. And I agree, I was with you. I thought the post-Stahl fight might be a little tighter, but to Crawford's credit, he dominated that fight. But, yeah, I don't see that much of a path for Porter here. I don't think he can outbox him like, you know, when he went to that technique more against Ugas and Garcia. And, you know, I think he would have to go with the mauling, but he's not hurting anyone. I mean, when you don't hurt a Formella, it's getting pretty bad, let's face it. I mean, you know, you can say, yeah, Formella takes a pretty good shot. You know, Ben didn't drop him either. But, you know, as we went over last week, I thought Ben's power doesn't look like it's going to carry against better fighters, even from what we saw against Granados. So, you know, I see Porter needing to maul, but the power's not there. Now, with Spence, he was able to do that and make it very close, but he still got dropped. And he lost. I thought he clearly lost. Some people thought that was close, or a couple outliers thought Porter won it. I couldn't see that. I thought Porter, as he does, you know, just like with Thurman, he gives it all he has, makes it tight. He would probably have to do that here. I still don't think he could win, but I think what I'm hinting at that's going to be different is, you know, I think Porter's at an age now. Let's face it. I mean, no questioning the guy's heart and toughness, but he, you know, he's had a lot of tough fights. He's doing a lot of broadcasting. Now, this is probably, you know, if he doesn't win it, kind of getting near the last hurrah, even though he's only lost to the best. You know, what I'm getting at is I don't think he wants them all anymore, Chris, to tell you the truth. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, you know, even though he got the win against Garcia and it surprised Garcia, I'm not sure boxing Garcia was the best strategy. You know, same with Ugas. You know, a lot of people thought, now in that one, a lot of people did think Ugas won. I didn't, but that was a much larger contingent. So I don't really know what he does here. I think the best we could hope for is we get the old Sean Porter, let's say, you know, because even though he lost, you know that war with Thurman, that was a great fight, and he really gave it all he had. And that was, you know, a better version of Keith Thurman than we saw against Pacquiao. So not taking anything away from Pacquiao, but that would be probably the best he could do, or what he brought against Spence, because I still think Errol Spence is the best, even better than Crawford. Some people agree, some people disagree, but I'll still stick with that. He's got to come back from the eye problem now, but certainly the version that fought Porter, to me, is better than Terrence Crawford. So, you know, He did bring that kind of game against Spence. Wasn't that long ago. I just don't know if he's going to be willing to do that anymore. But he needs to do that because, you know, he's got that strength. I mean, you know, we've talked about he wrestled in high school as well. He had a top amateur career, and he was a middleweight in the amateurs. You know, it's now becoming famous. It is a fact. It is funny to look back on that. I mean, he did beat Usyk as an amateur. So we know the guy's strong, and Crawford having come up at lightweight, that's kind of like the best scenario I can draw for Porter even at this stage. Is he's got that strength. He was a middleweight as an amateur. If he mauls Porter, and this is the best guy Porter's – excuse me, if he mauls Crawford, and this is the best fighter Crawford's ever faced, you know, could maybe that be enough, that maybe Crawford just hasn't been in this tough – for so long, could that be enough? I'd say, I guess that's a scenario in Porter's best scenario, but I don't think that's going to be enough. I don't know if Porter is going to be able to quite bring it with that intensity at this stage of his career. And like you said, Crawford can do more things. Crawford's KO percentage is high, and he has been stopping people even at welterweight. So Porter's got an excellent chin, really probably over his career one of the best chins in Brock. And he got dropped by Broner with a big shot, got dropped by Spence. But no shame really there. I mean, Broner with all his flaws, even up in weight, he does bring some pop. He just doesn't throw enough punches. So it's going to take a lot to stop Porter, but, you know, Crawford might be capable of doing it. And I'm glad they made this fight. Let's look at the good parts. I mean, Crawford is, of course, no worse than the number two welterweight after Spence, and Spence is on the shelf for a while. Crawford's certainly in the top, excuse me, Porter's certainly in the top half of the division. So it's a real good fight on paper, but you would always like to see it. But I think with this one, you'd like to see a good undercard. Why I say that is that, you know, we're all looking at this. The appeal of this fight is just, you know, this is the best guy Crawford's fought at welterweight and maybe the best guy in his career, and that is appealing. But you already saw the early odds on the fight with, you know, Crawford at a minus 550 favorite today. You know, is that,
yeah, you
enough,
gotta keep
though,
it in perspective
to, yeah, is like, is that enough to be a pay-per-view draw? And I think I was interested hearing what you said that Jake had told you. I kind of chuckled myself a little bit because, being on the plaintiff side of the law, a lot of times we work together on stuff, lawyers who have certain expertise, skills, and split fees. But there are certain cases that you get into where it's not enough to do a fee split. Once in a while, that is discussed. That, in other words, there's just not enough money to go around for everybody to split a fee on a case. So I was laughing to myself a little bit because, of course, this is on a big scale in the boxing world, but that really is a thing that, you know, they might have been able to work together, But that really could have been a thing where they just sat down and said, hey, you know, I think the way things are going in boxing and what we're looking at our numbers here, probably for the some of the possible limitations that I was just getting to, that there's just not enough to split here. What they have going for them is, you know, Crawford, again, for this era, he has been seen at least on ESPN quite a bit. And Porter has made, you know, NBC appearances in primetime, CBS appearances in primetime, a lot of broadcasting appearances. You know, very few fighters have that exposure nowadays. So there's some exposure to fall back on, but just the appeal of the fight itself, just, well, this is Crawford, the toughest guy Crawford's fought. You can see where we're headed, that it doesn't look like anybody's going to be picking Porter. I don't know if Crawford's enough of a sell then, you know, to carry that like that. It's going to be kind of tough. This would be one I would think the undercard would matter, but we know what we get a lot of times in boxing, and that doesn't mean we're going to get one.
Yeah, it feels good. And maybe just because, you know, the bar's been low the last 6 to 8 weeks where we're just like, yes, finally something we wanted, we got, or whatever. But, yeah, I could definitely see why Fox, one, didn't want to split, and two, didn't want to do a pay-per-view probably 2 weeks later than they already got one going. We'll see. What'd you think? What did you watch this weekend? Obviously, the clips of Holyfield getting grazed, and he was already stumbling around like he didn't have any, you know, life in his legs at all. We knew he wasn't supposed to be in the ring. Even, I guess, with an old MMA guy, he can't even be in the ring with, because, like I said, a grazing shot had him all over the place. Thank God he didn't get hurt. Tito Ortiz, yada yada yada. That type of thing. The Andy Venez and Jonah Carroll wasn't a great fight as far as action, but it was competitive. I did watch that, not on the pay-per-view, but that is available on YouTube. So until they take it off, that's not illegal because it's on YouTube to take it off. But did you see, what'd you think of any of the ESPN Plus, fight stuff? Because obviously Gabriel Flores Jr. got a bigger test than we even thought. We kind of liked that matchup based off of him beating Venez, Luis Alberto Lopez, and we thought, okay, this is going to be a nice little test. Let's see what Gabe does. And Gabriel Flores got beat. Unfortunately, Nakatani Acosta wasn't allowed to go further, or the fact that a broken nose stopped it. However, that was kind of a funky way to stop that. It didn't seem like the fighter or the corner wanted to, but it could have been a really fun fight. What'd you think of that ESPN Plus card, if you caught some of it?
Yeah, I don't like to get overly dramatic, but just for full disclosure, I just felt I had to do it on this one. You know, I boycotted the main event because I just didn't feel that Valdez should be in there with the positive drug test, which for a drug that VADA has banned, you know, in competition or out of competition, and VADA is the one doing the testing. It's supposed to be their clean drug program in a WBC fight, and then the WBC pulling a bait and switch saying, oh, that doesn't matter. That was just too much for me. It's not singling Valdez out compared to other fighters. It's not about that, but it just I just felt like ESPN should have pulled it. So, you know, people can watch what they want, don't get me wrong, but on this one I have to just give full disclosure where I was coming from, and it's not something I normally am doing, but I felt I had to do it on this one. So went back and looked at some of the highlights of that one afterward or around or two here or there. So, you know, a limited opinion, but, you know, I've seen Valdez fight plenty before this, and, you know, I'd seen Conceal a few, you know, a little bit before that, wasn't that impressed, but he did box better than I expected. And I had to disagree with what little bit I saw with people I saw tweeting and reporting that looked like the same old Valdez pre-Burchell. And some people are saying
it really
style.
Did.
True, but
it was the exact same.
Kind of strange because it was just the exact same. And I'm not even saying there it's necessarily But who knows? But not necessarily saying it's a drug thing, but like when you then you see that, that's when you got to kind of reevaluate. Like I always have been saying, as you get older, you realize you got to adjust. You got to have some strong opinions, but you got to adjust to what you see. And now what I'm getting at there is like, was there something wrong with Burchell? You know, like a weight cut that was just too much. And it could be because people were talking about that with him before that fight. You know, something like that, because you know we know how great Valdez looked. Or you know, some people might point to the drug issue. We don't know, and there was testing for that fight. But you know, look at the way the WBC handles things. They're a joke. So you know, I was in favor, you know, being on Transnational's board, that Valdez be removed. Some people didn't think he should be, but that conclusion was reached, and this morning he did get removed. So I felt good just in that sense that I, like, again, yeah. I didn't feel like it should be going forward. I'm on Transnational, and, you know, there were different opinions, but that did end up being the conclusion. So, you know, I feel like Transnational's got the most credible ratings because they're independent. You know, everybody has to be free of conflict. And so he's out, you know, as of today. So that was my position on that fight. Now, Gabe Flores, when he first started out, I thought, as you had pointed out last week, I thought he was too underpowered. He was fighting too cautiously, but his defense was great, and he wasn't losing rounds. You know, as they pointed out going into the fight correctly, all his wins were by knockout or unanimous decision, you know, going into this Lopez fight. So, you know, I'm not going to run away from it because, hey, these things happen when we try to evaluate prospects early on. You know, the guy did some things that reminded me of Roy Jones. Of course, he's a 130-pounder, and I'm going to be the first to say, obviously, he didn't remind me of Roy Jones Saturday night. Maybe the old Roy Jones, but not the prior. Maybe Roy Jones against Glenn Johnson or something like that. But
the Roy Jones fighting in Russia. The Russians, yeah,
Roy Jones when he became a Russian citizen, but not the prior Roy Jones. So, but I'm not going to run from it. You know, hey, I feel like I get a lot of stuff right, but you know, you got to now. Mm-hmm. What was I looking at? I didn't like the underpower, and you know, you've heard me say a lot, and when we've talked about it, I feel when you're at a certain level of a lack of power, and I think this does play out, you're not really a prospect, and he was on that edge. Even though he was good, really good defensively up to that point. But, you know, he took out Jason Velez, who's normally real durable. He had only been stopped by Valdez late in the last round when he went for the win when they fought. And, you know, Valdez is a pretty good puncher. And, you know, he bombed Jason Velez out of there. And the fights right before that, he was starting to show some power. And, you know, he was still young. You know, he's only 21 now. He had been 20 years old. So, in that instance, I was thinking, well, maybe this guy can, you know, KO percentage was still very low, but I was like, maybe this guy is young enough he can develop a little power. But you could see he sat down at the end. I did go back, you know, and then watch this fight because I was interested in Flores. And, you know, obviously he didn't have any drug issues or Lopez so that we know of. So wanted to see it. So went back, you know, did a thorough review of that. And I was shocked. I mean, I was shocked. You know, and I think maybe lost in this is Flores not getting enough credit for his heart at fighting on, you know, even though he's clearly losing the fight and he didn't want it stopped. I mean, you know, with what we see out of some fighters in this era, I mean, you know, people then got all caught up in, well, the fight should have been stopped. I mean, hey, that's the referee's job. You know, I'm not saying I don't like a corner stopping it when I think somebody's going to get seriously hurt, but that's why we have referees. I mean, let's not go too far overboard the other way. I mean, it's the referee's job to stop the fight or not. And, you know, if corners get too involved in stopping fights, it can be bad the other way. Crazy stuff can start happening, especially you got legalized gambling more and more on the fights now. And that always was a concern. I mean, that was, you know, where you had, you know, Nevada had the corner can't stop the fight. It's a disqualification. I mean, that's where those kind of ideas come from. In other words, you know, it's the referee's job. I mean, that's why we have a referee. That's what they're trained to do. That's what they're supposed to do. And you got a doctor around as well. So even though we like the romanticism of the corner knowing their guy and stepping in, and I'm not saying there's times I didn't want to see it. I wanted to see Wilder you know, I want to see Breland stop it against Fury. I thought Wilder was taking a beating. I thought he looked horrible. I didn't see a need for that to go on. So, you know, and there's a guy I'd been a believer in up to that point, you know, not saying I don't believe in him, but I thought that was a good stoppage by the corner. But cautioning, let's not get too carried away. I mean, Flores showed a lot of heart. You know, Lopez is a good puncher, but not a great puncher. So, but what I couldn't believe as well was that, I mean, Lopez was just, he wasn't even really cutting off the ring. He was just walking in with his hands down, chasing after Flores, and Flores couldn't do anything. So, you know, his father was talking about a weight cut and stuff. You know, you don't like to get into excuses, and he's obviously got flaws with the punching power, and I don't know what happened to his soundness defensively. That's what shocked me.
And it lends itself to the drug he tested positive for, too, if you talk about a weight cut, you know?
Yeah, with guys that have to cut weight, you know, that have to really cut weight. I mean, you know, like Flores here. I mean, his father was saying he had a big weight cut. You know, and they were saying Burchelt had one before the Valdez fight. So, you know, you just don't know. But I mean, as I've mentioned before, I was fortunate to one time discuss this with, you know, the great Kelly Pavlik, because I thought in the Martinez fight it was the cut that, you know, cost him down the stretch, and that just kind of drained him. And he said his weight cut was so bad that he was telling his wife the night before the fight he didn't have anything, and that when he came on and he was looked like he was going to overtake Martinez, he said, you know, he was so drained he just had nothing left. And that was the way the second part of the final part of that fight went. So just pointing that out, that, you know, instances where the fighter can get so drained that the performance is just off. But it's hard to tell. We're not in there with them. You know, we don't know what they had to lose right close to the fight, those types of things. And, you know, fighters are prone, because of the business they're in and the pride and the risk they have to take, to make excuses, because they have to be confident enough to get back in there. So I just wonder, but I'm just, you know, being candid that I did not expect it to unravel like that for Gabe Flores. And, you know, Chris, you'll laugh at this because you like calling people out on these tweets and some fanboy writers and things like that. I saw the day after the fight, I saw a lot of people saying they knew that was going to happen. I didn't see them all coming down with their money on Lopez, you know, the Friday of the fight, and bet the house on Lopez. And all of a sudden, Saturday after the fight, I saw all this stuff out there on social media. I knew that was going to happen.
Right. Let's see the ticket.
Let's see the ticket, because you had a chance to make a lot of money if you knew that was going to happen at the odds of that fight. I mean, so I didn't know it was going to happen. But,
no.
Yeah, I don't know where Flores, I don't know where Gabe Flores goes from here. He took a lot of shots, but I don't know, and he's young, but I don't know if Lopez was really that kind of a puncher that just the beating alone would keep him from coming back. It's hard, you know, sometimes it came with those things, but the power was a problem. It reared its head again because, to his credit, if you really look at that fight, like then late, when he wanted to stay in the fight, he didn't want to stop. He was trying to set down some, and he just couldn't hurt Lopez at all. Lopez was just walking through him, and Lopez didn't even have his hands up. He was just walking in with his hands down. I mean, it was, you know, when a guy has that much disrespect for what you're bringing offensively. But I just don't know what happened to Flores' defense in this fight either. I mean, he just got hit so easily. It was just one other theory possibility could be, I didn't want to kind of give Anthony Joshua this excuse in the Ruiz fight, but, you know, the more I look at what's transpired since, before and after, you know, he might have just gotten caught when he was trying to finish Ruiz off and just didn't recover from that shot, you know, when he got hit from that left hook. The only other thing I could think with Flores is, you know, he did get hit hard very early in the fight, like right off the bat. And, you know, maybe he just wasn't right the rest of the way because, you know, just the way he just couldn't defend these wild shots that were coming from Lopez, who was just walking in with his hands down. I just found that just strange. So we'll see, but that's my thought on that one. I thought that one was kind of a shocker.
Yeah, that was definitely a big shocker, no doubt about it. I thought Venez did enough to beat Carroll, but it could have went either way. Any other items that you want to touch upon at all? I mean, there is a card tonight on Triller that's $3 because it's – yeah, here's the deal. I forgot about this. I forgot that they had that. I thought it was just for, like, the pay-per-views, but I guess the Triller versus pass is $2.99, $3 a month, or $30 a year. But you do to be able to watch right now, I think Dutch Over and Albright are fighting. And then Pablo Cesar Cano and Danilito Zorilla. I like that fight. That is going to be a good fight. But, yeah, you do have to – I totally forgot. I thought it was going to be like their one in August when they had, you know, the versus thing and they had the fights before it. I thought it was just like that. That was free. This is actually $3 technically. So that's happening in a matter of like it's probably they're almost in the ring right now. And then Fat Joe and Ja Rule do the verses after. It sounds like Triller, and this comes from Kevin Aioli, he said, we're looking to step away from the exhibition stuff only. So they're looking to put on some really good boxing cards. Like, at the end of the day, we want to do a Triller Fight Club is to put on professional fights. We're stepping away from the exhibition stuff only, meaning they're still going to do it, just not only. Tyson was great, blah, 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 but the focus is on full-blown professional fights, and the focus is most certainly on full-blown good professional fights. There are more and more to come. So, I don't know. I'd much rather have it be $3 than what we're going to get, you know, for the Teofimo Lopez fight against George Camposos. That fight was supposed to happen in June. That's going to be $50, not $20, like they said. The problem is with Triller, and I was talking to this with Jake, too. This Kavanaugh, every other time, it's something else. They were building up Jake Paul in April saying he could be that crossover guy because he'll bring in the youth, and then all of a sudden they didn't want to pay him a certain amount, and so they dogged him and said he's a novelty act. Now all of a sudden, you know, Vito Belfort beats an old-ass 59-year-old basically Holyfield, and now they got $30 million. John, for, they say, oh, we got $30 million, even though they know he's signed to a contract. We got $30 million for you to fight Bill Belfort, but didn't you just say he was a novelty act? Like, which one is it? This guy, it's a real fight this weekend. It's real. It's the fight of the decade. Oh, wait, they're actually, it doesn't count on anyone's boxing records. That's the thing. I'm just sick of Triller with these exhibitions, pay-per-views. And then there's just so much nonsense and just straight-up lies that comes out of that camp, and it's just getting old. What are your thoughts at what Triller's done in the last 9 months? Because I do wish it would be more like what we got tonight. I think that's a good blend of music because there's a lot of older, you know, 30, 40, 50-year-olds that like hip-hop, and so they know these older rappers, and then they like boxing too. What are your thoughts here? Because this Kavanaugh dude, you know, and part of it is the media because they're the ones who eat this up. Even the Trump thing, just like Coppinger, it's hard to break news. I get it. He does a good job in a lot of ways, but he also is like, you know, his job is to do certain things on Twitter as well. And for them to report that they're also voting, you know, they're also talking to Obama just to make up for having Trump and Trump Jr. on there. I mean, this shit is despicable after a while, John.
Yeah, no, I have a high tolerance because, I think part of boxing's charm can be the bizarre event and things like that. We don't want it to take over from the best fights. But, you know, part of the charm is that it's not strictly regulated like the NFL or – you know, the NBA or Major League Baseball. And let's face it, there's times we want to see some of that, but sometimes it's funny in boxing how weird things can happen. So, you know, it's hard to draw a line because it's a matter of what people are into. But for me, it was like, you know, you and I have talked about this, like looking at the Triller stuff. I didn't like the Jones-Tyson thing as an exhibition. Like, in other words, you know, you're putting these older guys out there and I don't get this exhibition thing. But then, you know, you had Jake Paul knock it out, Nate Robinson in the undercard, and all these crazy commentators and music. So the overall show went well and people liked it. And then I really enjoyed the second one with, you know, Jake Paul fighting, Ben Askren and, you know,
right.
The bizarre mix on the undercard with music, with Bieber's out there and Doja Cat and, you know, Snoop Dogg, you know, commentating with Al Bernstein. And I mean, that was funny.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah,
that was
I give you that. I give you that one.
And then, so I'm giving them that too. And then, like, it's like to me, then it's like you're saying, they just didn't seem like they knew what they wanted to do. And then I hesitate to say it, but, you know, this thing Saturday night was a disgrace. I mean, you can't let a 58-year-old Holyfield get in the ring. And then they're saying after the fact it's an exhibition, but guys are getting knocked out. I mean, what's the purpose of having an exhibition?
Right.
It just doesn't make any – it just –
they're not bigger gloves. There's no headgear. Which one is it?
Yeah, which one is it? And then I'm just guessing. I don't know. I mean, how many people bought that? 1,000? I mean, you know, there couldn't have been any kind of buy rate. I don't think Triller is going to really be in this. I mean, I think you're right. Like, the music, the different presentation with the music boxing combo, some bizarre stuff, you know, but Lopez Kambosos isn't a good fight. I mean, you know, throw out this mandatory nonsense. I mean, you know, Kambosos is a guy barely, if I alone was making the top 10, I mean, you know, he is on the edge of transnationals, and, you know, that's the majority, you know, rules on that. You know, for me, I don't think he'd crack it. And, you know, but that's just me personally. So, you know, but let's even say he deserves to. So he's like the number 10 guy, you know. I mean, that's a pay-per-view fighting the champ, you know, Teofimo Lopez. It's not a pay-per-view. You know, so Triller, even though these things are $50, and then, you know, I thought the Jake Paul card on Showtime went well, but that was $50. I mean, you know, when they cut it down to 50, then sometimes you take a look at it as a consumer, fan consumer perspective, and think maybe I go with it. But, you know, then if there's too many of them, you can't keep doing that. I got to go back to what I've been saying the last couple of weeks. I mean this in a bad way. You like to be positive. The positive is you got Porter Crawford. They're legit top-ranked guys, traditional division. Same for, you know, Fury is the champ. He's fighting Wilder. Odds are relatively close. People are forgetting that. You know, they're talking up fights that the odds aren't as close as Fury Wilder 3, and that's the best undercard of the
year. That's a great
point. Yeah, I think it's worth pointing out. People, it's not being discussed enough. We have people saying, oh, I've lost interest in Fury Wilder 3, or I don't need to see it. Hey, guy, I got news
for
you.
What's the point of this?
What's the point? It's got closer odds than all those fights you're saying you like, and it's got the best undercard of the year. So I'm not following you there. So I'm looking for it. So if you want to be a glass half full, the good thing is you got Porter Crawford, you got Fury Wilder 3, which undoubtedly, even for the biggest naysayer or the guy that likes watching 108-pounders, they got to concede it's the best undercard of the year. I mean, because we just don't get that anymore. You got Joshua Usyk, a very, very interesting fight, another fight of legit top 10 guys in the heavyweight division. You know, Joshua really the number one ranked guy if Fury's a champ at this point. So another good fight, but with a dreadful undercard. But in the U.S., we get that on DAZN. So if you've got the kids, which isn't turned out to be that good of a value the way things are playing out, except for when you get a fight like this. So, and then you've got Canelo and Plant, an interesting fight. Odds not all that close. Plant's got talent, but, you know, he doesn't really have that experience level. But again, in 168-pound division, that's not as strong. Top two guys in transnational. So that's good. I'd like to see a good undercard there. Now, so glass half full, you've got some big fights that have real legitimate significance. We could use the other undercards getting beefed up to be more like the Fury Wilder 3 level. But the downside is look at what's going on. I mean, we're getting – anybody reasonable has got to admit, some people just don't want to talk about it, but we're getting pay-per-viewed out now. I mean, we're back to 2014 before PBC started trying to change some things. I know they're running a lot of pay-per-views now, but, I mean, let's face it, the market did change when they tried to do something differently, getting back onto network with some significant names. Top Rank filed along with the ESPN deal. HBO got out of the business. Those were significant shifts, but now to me, it's like we're sliding back to like 2000, around 2014, when everything was pay-per-view, and then the audience for the sport was shrinking, which led to the troubles, which led to PBC making the gamble that they made. Even Dana White commented on that, love him or hate him, but I think it's true when he said he originally had a boxing background. He said, hey, Al Haymon did something that needed to be done. Somebody had to do something. I mean, Dana White was right about that, love him or hate him. But what I'm saying now is, okay, so we're 6 years down the road. We're kind of sliding back. You know, you can't run this many pay-per-views. That's just asking hardcore fans to just keep reaching into their pocket, and you know, how often can they keep reaching in, and it's not drawing any other fans. So that's the downside.
That's three in 6 weeks. That's three legit one in 6 weeks. And if you add, and the crazy thing is, the one that really shouldn't be on pay-per-view at all, as we mentioned, the Teofimo Lopez, you could make arguments for the other ones, but still, you know, that's the week of. That's Monday before the Saturday pay-per-view for Fury Wilder. So if you back it up, not even about 5 days, something like that, that'd be four in a matter of about 7 weeks. Four of them in 7 weeks. That's a lot.
Yeah, you're almost saying, you're going to say, of course, we can't afford it, but that's a good point. Like, in a sane boxing world, where things in around 2015 – For a while, we were getting some of this, like, you know, a sane boxing world trying to maybe get the audience broadened a little bit again, and you know, not taking advantage of the hardcore fans quite as much. Right? You would shift a fight like Lope. I mean, come on, you know, we know Triller got involved, but if there was ever an ESPN fight, it's Lopez Cambosos. I mean, come on. And then, you know, really almost. Porter Crawford. I mean, it's, like I said, that's going to be a tough one. I mean, I mean Porter, they're both known compared to a lot of other fighters in boxing, but I don't know. That would be one. The undercard actually could help them on that one. If I'm not saying they're going to do it, but they came up with a strong undercard, but they really might need it on that one. Something interesting. Like, look, they're doing it with Fury Wilder 3. At least we know they're capable of doing it once in a while, because, you know, fights like Konatsky and Hellenius, Ajogba and Sanchez. I mean, again, we know you're talking about hardcore audience, but those fights, you know, those fights could stand on their own as, you know, TV events, not pay-per-view events, but as you know, good, well-viewed TV events. So they're and you know, Jared Anderson's also on there against an undefeated guy. So whatever inspired them on that one, they're given the kind of undercard you need to see. I think. Really, Canelo Plant could use that too, let's face it. I mean, that's a big opportunity to, you know, kind of almost remarket Canelo in the U.S. market, you know, fighting a guy like Plant. Be a good time to get some other fighters exposure and some good fights and beef that thing up. If they're going to, you know, Fox or Showtime, that would be then a CBS promo. You know you're going to be getting NFL promos, whether it's Fox or Showtime, because, you know, CBS and Showtime are under the same umbrella. So that could lead to some exposure for some other fighters on those undercards. But again, like hopefully, though, in decent fights, not just against no-hopers and showcase events, that's not really going to attract anybody.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Any other items you'd like to touch upon or bring up or anything like that?
I think that was the main stuff on my mind this week, Chris, is I'm still thinking a lot about, you know, we got some decent fights, but we're getting over pay-per-viewed. We just had some disgraceful stuff this past weekend, which you and I have already touched on. And to me, that's Valdez fighting you know, with the positive drug test and ESPN showing it and they went forward with it anyway, and then the absolute disgrace of, you know, the Holyfield Belfort with the, you know, Ortiz and Silva on the undercard. I mean, guys in their mid-40s, you know, that's over the top. That's beyond the boxing circus that has appeal and maybe draws in some viewers of interest. I mean, that was too much into the freak show dangerous side of the equation. Oh, and well, don't want to go on too long, but just since you asked, I'll try to keep it to a minute or two. But it was something on my mind that when we're talking about some of the good stuff and some of the problem with boxing, I mean, this is something I would consider you and I would be on the same page too with these people. But like, look, I want the boxers to make as much as possible. We don't get the promoters opening their books. We don't know how much they're making these sanctioning bodies. You know, that should be something we get to know. In a revenue sharing in a sport, you want the boxers to make as much as possible. It's the most dangerous sport, so they're taking the biggest risk. So I always like it just like anybody else like that. If Canelo's making a lot of money and then, you know, it's money a promoter's not making, a promoter organization, that's fine, or less than a TV network's making. But you look at this fight recently, like where that Jeanette Zacharias Zapata died in the ring, and she got paid $1,400. You know, people who want the fighters to make a lot of money, they're not looking at the sport sometimes as a whole. In other words, what I'm getting towards here is like when Mayweather makes $250 million and Pacquiao makes $100 million, I'd rather them make it than the promoters and the TV networks. Don't get me wrong. I'm with people who are for the fighters like that. But it's hard to have a sport where, you know, you've got undercard fighters who are risking their lives literally in the sport making that kind of money. In other words, it doesn't really make sense that Canelo makes $40 million a fight and then
right.
somebody gets $1,400 and loses their life in the ring. Now, we know nobody wanted that to happen, but in other words, it's not enough to attack Dana White and say the fighters should be making more money, not Dana White. He's got a revenue share. You know, I agree with that, but the answer is also not boxing where you got fighters on undercards risking their life for $500 and then they got to pay a trainer and a manager and get taxed. I mean,
right.
So what I'm saying is there's got to be an even, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but when we talk about these issues, there's got to even be a better concept of revenue sharing, you know, with the risk of injury in their lives. You know, you can't just go pure capitalist with the fighters either, just like you can't with the promoters or the TV networks. In other words, some of that money really would be better evenly distributed. So you have a sport, in other words, so you can have a sport where maybe you have a pension fund, you know, for the fighters, some kind of pension fund at least. And maybe under, you know, now we don't want no hopers who just fall down and don't try just to get a big paycheck just because they're in there. That's not my point. But, you know, when you have undercard fighters that are trying hard enough that they literally die in the ring or, you know, suffer serious brain injuries, things like that, we know that happens too, that, you know, we're not really talking about. I mean, these people are not being adequately compensated, I mean, for what risks they're taking. So it's just another part of the issue I think needs to be looked at more.
Well said. Well said. I appreciate you coming on, fitting you in the schedule. You have yourself a good night, John. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Chris. Great being with you as always. Have a good night.
Yep. Take it easy.
Take care.
All righty. Yep, sir. All righty. So we're probably just going to kind of end it on some fight news and, of course, the boxing Twitter segment. Some folks have been messaging me. Even before today about this Crawford and Porter and whatnot. And I definitely lean Crawford on this one, but according to sources from Michael Coppinger, Terrence Crawford is guaranteed upward of $6 million. And that's always a weird way to put it. Terrence Crawford is guaranteed upward of $6 million. Nah, it's not the strangest way, but it to me it's kind of like, okay, so he's getting that, or it's upward of it, it's past that, or anyway. But Sean Porter will earn at least $4 million for the fight. And I said it to be, what I say, anywhere from $6 to $10 million it would take, thinking $8 to $10 million. I think that's what I said, to make that, you know, fight happen. So that's kind of, there's some news. Some people did ask me about that. Fight date soon come. Fight date soon come. That's what Gervonta Davis just posted on Instagram. And some folks kind of are starting to believe that it might be against Rolly. Romero. Rolando Rolly Romero. He's been talking a whole lot of stuff about Gervonta Davis. This is a recent tweet of his. He says, Rolly talked himself into something big, right? That's what he said. Then he said, well, technically something little, something small. Well, we know Gervonta's a pretty little dude. He packs a punch. Please don't hit me, Gervonta, for saying you're little. But I got to admit, like, I like to fight. I would like to fight because there's a lot of power in the ring. I'm assuming it'd be at 135. And the buildup would be great because Tank's a pretty quiet dude. He'll say some stuff, but he's pretty quiet. His interviews are usually pretty – he's getting a little better interviewer. You know, he's getting better. It takes a little while, but he's getting to be a better interview, like I said, but he's still kind of – he's just so quiet, and it's to the point. But as he's getting better, Rolly's the guy that can bring stuff out of him. You know what I mean? So I think that would be a good fight. He's got a lot of power at 35. This is from Talk Sport. Billy Joe Saunders. Here we go. Billy Joe Saunders has declared that he is going to retire from boxing unless Chris Eubank Jr. rematch can be agreed upon. The only fight I come back for is that fight. If the money is what I wanted, if not, I wouldn't bother. So the only fight you're going to come back is to fight a rematch from quite a while ago? It's kind of weird. By the way, Juan Manuel Lopez charged with 7 counts of domestic violence. He's out on bail and under a house arrest. This is Jake Donovan reporting. By the way, if you're just tuning in lately, we had Jake Donovan, senior writer for BoxingScene.com. Earlier, we were talking about a variety of stuff. Juan Manuel Lopez, this is Jake, posted $175,000 bond and is under electronic surveillance while awaiting a September 21st preliminary hearing. Like I said, 7 counts. So, wow, if that is true, my goodness. This is Full Send Podcast. Jake Paul has confirmed Tommy Fury is the opponent he wants to face next. I want to fight a real boxer. I think Tommy Fury is probably at the top of the list. This guy comes from a legendary boxing bloodline. He's undefeated. Let's run it up. I think that actually would be an interesting fight, just because it's at least a boxer. Tyson Fury. Oh, boy, here we go. I loved watching Mike Tyson come back and fight. I'd love to fight Mike Tyson in an exhibition. If Dillian White fight don't happen, then I'd love to fight Mike in an exhibition. Tyson versus Tyson, past versus present. Money grab. Okay, whatever. this is Zynda Sports. Karim Zynda. This is a rebuttal off of Coppinger saying that Kavanaugh had been in talks with the Obama Foundation to have Barack Obama on. When we know, right when we saw that tweet from Coppinger, we knew that was bullshit. And it was only because they had Donald Trump and Trump Jr., Triller did, on their commentary. and this was the follow-up, an Obama Foundation spokesman says the foundation has not spoken with Ryan Kavanaugh, and the idea that Barack Obama is in talks to comment in a boxing match is inaccurate. Well, no shit, dude. You know, like, what? Just make your move. You wanted to have Trump on your broadcast. Just have Trump. Don't try to make up for it with some dumb shit. Credit to, well, actually, I won't give him credit because he shouldn't have been doing the, yeah, I'm not going to, I was going to give Lampley some credit, but he shouldn't have been doing the fight anyway because it's an exhibition, it's a joke, but then all of a sudden Trump gets added, then he bails, so I'm not going to give him credit, actually. This is Zedin Sports. He said, when a journalist parrots any organization claims without confirming valid validity, especially when the claim comes from a questionable businessman who's already filed for bankruptcy twice, he's talking about Kavanaugh. Well, either way on that one, Kavanaugh and Trump, he is a little more than an extension of said organization PR team. Exactly, and that's what we got. We got a bunch of PR guys, you know, in the sport right now. Newly, what is it? Adios. It was a WBA eliminator at 168, Lennox Allen, who went the distance last year. He went the distance last August, I believe. Yep, last August with David Morrell Jr. He got stopped. This is a WBA eliminator. Your boss, Newly. I can't remember how to say his name, but he's going to be on the radar, it seems. This is something I did appreciate from Jake Paul. He said he's in talks with Eddie Hearn to make the Amanda Serrano-Katie Taylor fight. I guess he's helping advise Serrano. So that's dope. That's really dope. Oh, here's some big news. Everyone's going to be pumped about this. Rivas and Jennings. This is for immediate release. BC Bridgeweight World Championship. It's called The Conquest. The rematch, October 22nd. I think this is on, is this ESPN Plus? I can't remember. Maybe I'm wrong with that. But the first, you know, that Bridgeweight, that belt, the new belt that's just bullshit, Oscar Rivas and Brian Jennings, there's some news for you. This should be, you know, pretty basic news that you just assume was going to come out. Robeson, is that how you say that? Robinson? Conceição has filed complaint with the WBC following his controversial loss to Oscar Valdez. That's what his manager, Sergio Battarelli. Among the grievances, the judges officiating, and of course the drug test fiasco. And, you know, like I said earlier, one of the judges that I believe had it, what did he have it? He had it really wide. I can't remember what the card was. Oh, yeah, 117-110. So he had it 9-3, which is ridiculous. He's come out and said sorry, but by him saying that, he's already kind of said, hey, you know, I messed up. My bad. So it lends the door for, you know, it opens up the door for this this appeal. Hopefully he gets it too. Boots Ennis, 8 weeks out, October 30th date, Showtime. Boots Ennis has got a date. Hopefully it's against a good fighter. Dan Raphael, WBA, has scheduled a purse bid for a 154 final eliminator between Michael Soro and Israel Madrimov on September 20th via video conference. The winner of that fight, Soro and Madrimov, would become the mandatory for Jermell Charlo. The minimum bid, of course, is $110,000. This is cool, too. They split it 50-50. Promoters must pay a $7,500 fee to participate in the bid. Huh. They only want real bids, I guess. Interesting. I didn't hear that one before. Okay. So I think that's it for news. Oh, here's a little and then we're just going to get some boxing Twitter, and then we're going to get the hell out of here. This is from VADA, VADATesting.org. After 40, our brain shrinks on average 5% per. This means the bridging veins connecting brain to its coverings are at increased risk of tearing and increased risk of brain bleeds when head is hit. Safety first. Yeah. Vada, that's a good message. That's a good message. I think that's about it for that. Yeah, let's get into boxing Twitter, and then we're going to get the hell out of here. Let's throw a parade for Crawford, guys. He's finally fighting his first elite opponent in a decade. He's coming off a loss to Errol Spence. Well, really, dude? So now you're going to say he's – this is what pisses me off. Everyone wants to see a Crawford in a big fight. So do I. But then now he's in a big fight, and you're going to say, oh, but he's coming off a loss. Well, technically, he's not coming off a loss. He won last year. But to sit here, now you're going to downgrade it? Like, which one is it? Do you want the fight or not? You're kind of showing your true colors there. You know this sport has some screwed-up people covering it when the same people crying fall at pay-per-views involving elite active fighters go out of their way to defend the Holyfield-Belfort event because they have a chummy relationship with a guy like Ryan Kavanaugh. Yes, I believe that. Okay, here's some more. Oh, my gosh. This is a message. Oh, boy. Terrence Crawford smiles, gives Sean Porter only 8 weeks to prepare for a title fight. This seems like a forum, and I think either this is the guy that posted it. I feel like this was in Boxing Scene 4. Boxing. So just right away, he gives Sean only 8 weeks to prepare. Dude. I mean, he could have started 2 weeks ago when the first purse bid, they extended it. That'd be 10 weeks. Like, we already knew that they called it. Do you think Sean Porter is not going to be ready for this fight? This guy's always training. To sit there and, okay, so he goes on to say, Crawford is at it again with the cherry-picking antics. If not fighting bums like Ray Beltran and Ndongo or calling out Gary Russell, he'll handicap them and make them fight on short notice. Sean Porter at a big disadvantage at the start. Meanwhile, Crawford was already working out preparing for Porter months ago. He even posted working out sparring with Khan and Garcia. The 147-pound Ryan Garcia back in July. Dude, when did they call this fight? They called it a while ago. So that's bullshit. That's totally bullshit. Completely nonsense. By the way, Muhammad Ali he doesn't have a coming out. There's a documentary, a four-part series, I believe. I can't remember what it's on. I can't remember if it's on. Oh, shit. There is a four-part documentary coming out, but Netflix just put out a Malcolm and Ali. It kind of goes over their relationship where it's kind of up and down and all around. So I think they had a falling out to an extent because a lot of that had to do, with the Nation of Islam and all that. But I heard it's good. I've heard from multiple people now that it's good. I didn't think it was coming out just yet. But, yeah, that's something to keep an eye on. Oh, here we go. We know exactly how Crawford versus Porter plays out. It's a rerun of his losses to Thurman and Spence. But you know what's fun? Thurman and Spence against Porter were some of the best fights of those years, 2016 and 19. So I hope we get a rerun. Do we know how Crawford and Taylor goes? No. Josh poses more questions, and I give him a bet. That's the key. This guy gives him a better chance than Porter. Tio is a wild one, but there's intrigue and unknown there. Well, there's intrigue and unknown with Porter, too. But, so Taylor is a better opponent. A guy who hasn't fought at welterweight is a better opponent than Porter, because you know how it's going to go. But we know how a lot of fights are going to go. It's wild yet not surprising that it was Porter to be the first welterweight to fight Bud. He means the PBC, high, top-level PBCs, because, he has fought other PBC welters. Out of Spence, Thurman, Danny, Pack, Porter, it being Porter, the one to cross the street, is something to admire from the always willing. The performance around this Crawford and Porter purse bid is ridiculous. Is it a fight I want to see? Not really. Does it do anything for Crawford's legacy? No. The fact is, Porter's last win was against Sebastian Formilla, a bloke who Conor Benn beat two fights. Obviously, this, I love me some UK fans, but this sounds like another, like the last guy, to be honest with you. So the performance around this, you mean the negotiation prop? This hasn't been a performance. It's a negotiation, and they beat the purse bid. Is it a fight I really want to see? Not really. Does it do anything for Crawford's legacy? Okay, so what is Crawford's legacy then? Just multiple weight classes? And he beat Postal and Gamboa and Horn? Is that legacy too? I hate when people try and downplay Anthony Joshua's achievements in the sport of boxing. So far, he's ahead of Tyson Fury in my eyes. Okay, he's ahead of it. Here we go again. I couldn't give two fucks about this fight anymore. The fact that this fight can't get done, we're treating it like a super fight, is pathetic. Oh, this one. This one was after Holyfield got knocked out. Or TKO'd, whatever. Holyfield was always overrated. He was fortunate to come up at a time when the heavyweight division was incredibly weak. That's what this dude, Benjamin Haas, I think that's his real name. This is what you're going to say after this old-ass dude just got grazed with the shot and was bumbling and stumbling all over the ring? He was always overrated. Yeah, because the 90s were so shitty for heavyweights, right? I bet you he thinks the 2020s are better for heavyweights. I bet you that's what he thinks. Valdez said he lost sleep over the situation, which is funny because one of the side effects is insomnia of the drug he took. Or it was in the system, however you want to put that. Could someone tell Eddie Hearn cards are only stacked when the card is well matched and not when his quote-unquote stars are fed off-weight opponents? Yeah, no shit. He is. A lot of people like doing that, but he's like the leader in the clubhouse of doing that. Dude, there's this guy, and this guy. We're not going to mention who the hell they're fighting, but there's this person, and there's that boxer dude. It's stacked. Like him talking about the undercard for Dillian White's next, Oh, Dillian White's got a pay-per-view. We don't know the opponent yet, but it's going to be on the zone. No, it's going to be normal to zone, but we don't know the opponent. Boxing writers spent too much time hyping up Triller as the next boxing power broker to tell the true story of a guy behind it who has had a bankruptcy, fraud, sleazy allegations, follow him throughout his previous career. Yes, that dude's a bullshitter. This will be the last one. There's going to be a bad, bad outcome at one of these senior boxing exhibition events sooner or later. Holyfield absorbed thousands of punches from some absolute killers decades ago. It was never knocked unconscious. No interest whatsoever watching whether it happens now or not. Okay, one more. Someone just sent me this. Triller interested. Oh, my God. Thanks for sending this, whoever. I don't know your real name because it's not a real name. Triller interested in making Donald Trump versus Oscar De La Hoya exhibition on Triller pay-per-view. I think it's no coincidence De La Hoya backed out of COVID and Triller acquiring Trump as a commentator for Saturday. Last time Triller hired Oscar De La Hoya to commentate for Paul Askren, and now he got a deal to return boxing. I predict De La Hoya will fight either Trump or Trump Jr. in an exhibition on Triller pay-per-view in December. I mean, fuck it. They might as well do it, right? That would be ridiculous. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. Like I said, I am going to watch those fights tonight. I'm going to watch the battle. Actually, I think the battle's starting here soon. But I am going to go back and watch that Cano-Zorio fight in the card and whatnot, that Dutch over Albright fight. I'm going to watch some of these fights. I'll give you my take next week. Enjoy, you know, some fights that are going on this week. And the PBC on FS1 has a Saturday and a Sunday fight card. Just so you know, obviously, there's not much to talk about because, you know, we got the Fulton and Figueroa fight got knocked off because Figueroa got, you know, COVID. So, obviously, not much to talk about for this weekend. Anyway, we'll be back next week. Peace out.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel